6, 10 o'clock. I'd like to call the Board of Technical Registration in session. Mr. Hayden, can you do roll call, please?
Sorry.
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Mr. Kolenka?
Present.
Ms. Clutt?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesbitt?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Hovick? Ms. Lingard?
Here.
Ms. Skanky? Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Bohol?
Here.
And we have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, it's time to call the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38-43101H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Chris Hubbard. Good morning. My name is Chris Harper. I'm a licensed structural engineer in Phoenix, been here for 26 years. My purpose here today is to draw attention to the board about this exam of waiver application during the structural engineering approval process. I'm requesting the board to revisit the exam waiver structural engineering licensing process being applied under ARS 32126. The cause for my concern is that I don't know if it's being applied correctly. It's my understanding that sections A, C, and D do not apply, and I believe that section B is being misinterpreted. It states that a registered professional engineer who holds a proficiency designation in one branch of engineering in this state seeks an additional or different policy for a proficiency designation shall submit evidence to the board either not given another additional or different, but the license of structural engineering, I believe, is an advanced licensing through civil engineering. For some of you may not know, in Arizona, you're allowed to practice civil engineering and with a structural emphasis without actually having a license. So I don't see it as being additional or different. I do see it as being a specialist license through civil engineering. Additionally, civil engineering does not currently prevent anybody from practicing, and I believe that applicants are also using the experience requirement obtained under the civil engineering exam for section B.1, but are not taking the exam as stated in section B.2. I believe this is a manipulation of their experience. They're using the same experience twice. They're getting 4 years experience, taking a civil filing for this examination or this exemption, get a structural engineering license without actually qualifying. Even in their own, in that same section, I also believe it's a manipulation system. As stated in section 8.3, the applicant needs at least 10 years of experience. If you're from another state and the similar, with a similar license from another state, also stated in section D, and just as engineering training means 12 years of experience. So, again, I do believe that this is being misinterpreted and currently people are being licensed as structural engineers without being qualified. Additionally, what I'd like to say is on the license, the actual license, the certificate that the structural engineer gives you, it clearly states, having exhibited to the State of Arizona Board of Technical Registration, SACRA's satisfactory evidence of good moral character and qualifications and proficiency, is hereby authorized to practice proficiency in the State of Arizona and use the title of Registered Professional Engineer with the emphasis on structural engineering. An exam waiver does not support this. Saying that you can't do it, to me it seems like you're either unable or unwilling to do it. So I don't see how that qualifies a person as being proficient in the practice. It does not help the industry, it does not help the state, it does not help the practice of structural engineering. So who does it actually help? It helps those that are trying to circumvent or bypass the actual process. I could go on and on about the state licensing requirements established by SEILC, the model of law of structural engineering examiners. They are developed a standard through National Council of Engineering Examiners and Surveyors to provide and establish the minimum set of qualifications for licensed structural engineering. They are actually going through the entire country and almost every state has adopted. So this same registration is being used throughout the country. And what's happening now, and I know from a specific example, is that people are being licensed and they're not qualified in structural engineering. Arizona hasn't really reached that point where you have to be a structural engineer to design a structure yet. It hasn't gone through the executive branch because that's where it sits. Everybody's waiting for it to happen. But complex structures need complex attention and qualified individuals. And I think bypassing this process is not in benefit to the profession or the public.
Okay, Mr. Harper, I appreciate you coming in. We can't really debate it or discuss, but we can internalize it and see if there's an item for future agenda. I appreciate you coming in.
And Mr. Harper, this is Judith here. Thank you. I want to thank you also for your time and coming in today and invite you to attend the Laws and Rules Committee meeting on Tuesday, October 10th. That's an open meeting, and if you'd like to have that considered for an agendized item, you could send us an email with a little more specifics.
Okay, sure. Who do I send an email to?
You can send it to me, Kurt Winter. You can find our, it's on the website, all the staff contact information is on the website.
So that was October 10th?
Yeah, and SEILC, is that the Structural Engineering Licensing Coalition?
Yes.
Okay, that's the first I've heard of that. I was just Googling it while you were saying it, so thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that even on your own agenda, there's more and more applicants trying to go through the same process. And again, I'd like to remind you, they're either unwilling or unable to do it. I don't know which is the case, neither of which helps.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Greta.
Thank you. Okay, board, let's move on to the adoption of minutes. We have board meeting minutes from August 22nd and executive session minutes from the 22nd. Can I get a motion? Any discussion first on the minutes? Seeing none?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to approve the August 22nd board meeting minutes along with the August 22nd executive session meeting minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Collective. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. All those in favor say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to the consent agenda. Does that five? Julie Pham, can you share licensing items, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have all the licensing items under the consent agenda as usual. Is there any questions I'm available to answer?
Board, any questions on any of these applicants? No discussion. Can I get a motion then to approve the consent agenda?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I motion to approve consent agenda 5A.
And that's A1 through A8. Very good. We have a motion to accept the consent agenda. Items 5A1 through 8. Can I get a motion of that, please? Okay, thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Any other discussion? Okay. That motion passes. Thank you, sir. And move on to item 6.1. This is a consideration of a signed consent agreement in lieu of public hearing. Board, we have a signed consent agreement. If there's, we can open this up for discussion. Otherwise, we can go ahead and accept a motion to accept the signed consent agreement.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, we need to...
You, in one motion, you can, if you choose to accept the signed consent agreement and also vacate the hearing.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for agenda item 681 and also vacate the hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Calico. We have a motion to accept the signed consent agreement and vacate the hearing. Can we get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sales. We have a motion and a second to accept this. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Any discussion? Any opposition? Okay. That motion passes. Okay, let's move on to enforcement. We have a lot of attendees today, so I'd like to vote for those who are attendees. We'll start with 71. We have a motion for dismissal. So we have the respondent and the ledger, I believe, who are available for discussion. Mr. Hall, are you here?
Yes.
Okay, please come forward. Ms. Keyes, are you online?
Ms. Keyes is no longer with the it's myself.
Pardon me. I apologize. For those in the audience, we have these microphones are walkie-talkie style, just so when you do come up here, you got to hold down the button, or else nobody online can hear you. Sorry, I should have said that at the beginning of the meeting.
Ms. Keyes is no longer with Humco, so I'm here and representation and Stacy Wall, the CEO of the company.
Great. Yeah, sorry for your name. Is Joshua Hall online?
No, that's me.
Oh, you're Joshua. Okay, sorry.
No.
Okay. We have a recommendation from our staff to dismiss this case, but if you want to share a quick summary. Ms. Crawford, I'm sorry. Can you give us a brief summary on what this case is all about, and then we can ask Mr. Hall to speak?
Certainly. Good morning, Board. On November 23rd, 2022, the Board received a complaint alleging that respondent, who at the time was director of Skyrise Operations with a respondent firm, and respondent firm advertised the practice of architecture on their website without firm registration with the Board. Board records indicate that respondent firm has never been registered with the Board. So this case is a companion case to P23052, who will also be brought up during today's meeting. During the course of the investigation, it was discovered that HOA MCO believed that Mr. True was, in fact, a registered architect and then a retired architect, largely based on the material that was provided and stated by Mr. True. When they discovered that he was not a registered architect, they removed such language from their website. Mr. True's position does not require him to be a registered architect, and the focus of his duties are to monitor compliance with association's guidelines, governing documents, and planned community statutes.
Thank you, Ms. Conklin. Mr. Hull?
Yeah, with the HOA, we're not an architectural firm at all. We're just the administrators for the HOA's design review committees per state statute 33-1817.
Very good. Yeah, that's our understanding as well. So, anything else you want to add to that?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Board, we have a motion to recommend dismissal of this case. Can we get a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to dismiss case P23-053.
Mr. Kalubek, can I get a second, please?
Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I'll second.
Very good. We have a motion and a second to accept the staff recommendation for dismissal. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that passes. Mr. Hall, thanks for coming in. Thank you for your time. Well, we're going to move on to 72. Mr. Curtio, will you give the board a brief summary?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I think it's worth noting that Mr. Smith.
Yes, Mr. Smith, are we recusing from this
matter? Oh, yes.
We just need, for the record.
This is Keith Smith. I recuse myself from this matter.
Okay, Mr. Cartel.
Good morning. So this case came up through information that was discovered while investigating another case. This case is based on Mr. Smith's firm being listed on the preferred vendors list on a website for Century 21 real estate company. Mr. Smith gave a response to this, indicating that he has never paid to be on that list, and that being on that list simply gives him benefits as far as being on their website and being able to display his company information in the real estate office, but that he's never paid for that information. Of course, staff spoke with the vice president of the real estate company. She verified that he's never paid for it, nor has any other home inspector company or a title agency, for that matter, that are listed on that list. She also verified that what benefits are provided free of charge. We issued a subpoena requesting records of any sort that correspond with Mr. Smith's participation in that program. The information that was provided further verified that he has not paid to be on that list. And being that the rule that this attaches to has paying for the benefits as its central focus, we have recommended dismissal because we were just simply unable to verify that any payment was ever made for that service.
And Mr. Chair, if I may just add briefly, Mr. Smith also has been treated as any other subject of investigation in this matter, and has been walled off completely from any investigation process, and his board materials have not included any reference to this case.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Mr. Smith, you're in attendance. You want to have anything to say, or we can just move on to a motion? Board made a recommendation from staff to dismiss case HI 23043. Can I get a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss case HI 23-043.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Can I get a second, please?
This is Dan Clare, a second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to dismiss case HI 23043. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Any discussion or opposition? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Okay. Mr. Smith has rejoined the board. Okay, let's move on to 73. This is another case for dismissal, Mr. Eden. I think we have the respondent or the alleger online. The ledger. Is Christy Greenhart online?
she had a plane to catch. She wanted to come in early.
To the board, she said she was going to call in, but Mr. Williams also emailed me this morning and said that he would be in attendance, so I don't know if he's online. He's the respondent.
Okay, Mr. Williams, are you online?
Okay. I believe the alleger is online. She was just in the meeting.
Okay. Christy, are you online now? Are you muted?
As a reminder, star 6 if you're on a telephone to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, good, thank you.
We're going to have Mr. Eaton give us a brief summary, and then I'll give you a minute to share your position.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Eaton.
To the board, on April 19th, 2023, board staff received this case for investigation, alleging that on June 20th, 2022, respondent, while at his residence in Peoria, Arizona, represented himself to alleger as a knowledgeable and accredited off-grid solar systems engineer. Alleger said that she purchased a solar system from respondent that he advertised for sale on Craigslist, with the caveat that the solar system would be compatible with alleger's current HVAC unit and household appliances. After the purchase of the solar system, alleger was advised that the system she purchased from respondent was not compatible with her current HVAC unit. After speaking with respondent, alleger, and witnesses, board staff was unable to locate any information where respondent referred to or advertised himself as an engineer. There was also, board staff was unable to locate a contract bearing the same information. Furthermore, alleger only purchased solar panels from respondent, which were later supposed to be designed and installed by a witness and not the respondent.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Eaton. Christy, would you share your position on this?
I did not purchase the device on Craigslist. I went to his home and he, created a device specific for me. It wasn't anything that he just had. It was a package that he designed for me. And I didn't just purchase the solar panels. I purchased the whole system, the inverters and the whatever, all the batteries, everything that goes along. I don't even know what those devices are. It's a whole board full of four or five different pieces of equipment. And the person who said it was not compatible was his team. He said, I have a team, and this guy will be the one that will get your plan through your HOA and then install it for you. And that team member of his is the one that said this system isn't near adequate for your house. So it was the same day, and I called Glenn Williams, and I said, Glenn, you know, it's not going to work. We need something different. And he refused to take it back.
Okay. Sorry about that. There's really nothing the board can do in that situation. We're really addressing the fact that he did not present himself to you as an engineer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Corroborated by some of the other
witnesses. But how can he then design a system for me if he's not an engineer?
I don't have a direct answer for you in the fact that he did not present himself as an engineer, and he may have experience with the systems, but probably maybe not adequate, but the fact he did not present himself as an engineer to design this for you, that's really all we have to address this morning. And
all right. He told me he was an engineer, but I didn't ask for any paperwork.
The review by our staff, by the investigation committee, talked to some of the other witnesses and alternates, and they confirmed the fact that he never presented himself to any of them as an engineer either. So that was the reason for the dismissal.
Yeah, it was just my husband and I and Glenn in his backyard. There was nobody else there when we bought the system. Everybody else was someone that he gave us phone numbers for. In fact, it was the Uber driver was the one that told me about Glenn. And so then he gave me Glenn's number. I called Glenn. Ever was an engineer as well. They said they work on, or they get Tesla batteries and rework them and sell them. And so, anyway, from him, then it was just my husband and I meeting. And we thought he was a licensed engineer. You know, I never said, where's your paperwork? But there was nobody else there when he sold us the system. It was him and my husband and myself.
Chrissy, I appreciate you calling in, but at this point, we don't have really anything to corroborate the fact that he presented himself as an engineer, and the other witnesses involved confirmed that. So that's the reason at this point we have a recommendation for dismissal. But I hope you can maybe salvage the use of those panels in some other fashion. But at this point, we have to make a decision.
I understand your thing. You know, and I did take him to small claims court, and I did win, but he's not paying. He's just a bad person, and I hate for this to happen to anybody else.
I appreciate you calling in. Good luck to you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Board, we have a motion for staff to recommend dismissal. This case is P23-101. Can I get a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss case P23-010.
Thank you, Mr. Sales.
101.
Can I get a second, please?
Mr. Chair, it's Mike Lake. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? No. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Very good. Your motion. And Ms. Mingren voted aye. Anybody opposed? Thank you. All right, that motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Eaton. Okay, I'd like to jump to 7D1 since we have the ledger here. Robert Impulk, are you present? You say you're supposed to be here in person with us across the board. Is he online, Kurt, by chance?
I don't see him. If you were calling in, star 6 to unmute your phone.
Mr. Involved, apparently not available. We have a motion for dismissal.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Mr. Involved?
That's me. It just took me a while on this phone.
Okay. We have a recommendation for a concern. Ms. Crawford, can you give the board a summary of this case, please?
Certainly. On March 16th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that a respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Mesa, Arizona, on or about December 29th, 2022, failed to report that the water softener drain line tied into vent piping, not laundry drain, failed to report on about a dozen very loose electrical outlets, failed to report on the dock door that is not sealed, failed to report that the kitchen is not fully protected with GFCI, failed to report on about 6 wall switches that were disconnected, failed to report that the outside electrical outlet was not secured and fell off the house, and failed to report that the outside electrical outlet were not GFCI protected. It is also alleged that respondent failed to report that the front of the house where concrete was raised is blocking stucco from breathing and water is getting underneath and leaching, and failed to report that the door bell is broken. Board, this case is solely regarding the listed concerns. There is a companion case that does address the IR concerns relating to the initial complaint, and that case will not be brought before the board at today's meeting, but it will be for a future meeting.
A case assessment was completed for this case and found two of the initial nine allegations had merit, the movement of the electrical outlets and the exposed foam around the dock door. The assessment stated that both of the concerns were minor in nature and do not require extensive repairs. The home inspection report itself was also assessed, and one additional deficient SOP was discovered. Based on the recommendations of the assessment, board staff is recommending a letter of concern for respondent.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Board, any questions? Mr. Impall, can you give us a brief summary of your position here, please?
My position here today was just to... Hey, guys. My position here is, if there was any questions, I made myself available. Whatever the board decides, I mean, this is what you do for a living, so you're smarter at this than I am.
Well, thank you for calling. I appreciate that. Board, any questions for Mr. Unfold or Ms. Crawford?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we dismiss HI's
issue letter of concern.
Letter of concern for HI 23029.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. We have a recommendation from staff to issue a letter of concern for HI 23029. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lingren?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Impall, appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, ladies, have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Received a complaint alleging that respondent, a non-registrant, used Christopher Barbie's signature and civil engineering seal on a set of drawings, calculations, and special inspection, special structural inspection certificate, altered the date on the stamp without Mr. Barbie's knowledge, and submitted a set of drawings to the city of Flagstaff. This was regarding a project in Flagstaff known as the Humphrey Street Project. Mr. Barsby was made aware of this when the city of Flagstaff contacted him regarding some issues with those drawings. By the five pages of structural engineering sheets in that plan had Mr. Barsby's signature and seal placed on it. One sheet of the calculations had his seal on it, and the special inspection form had his seal on it. So that's seven seals on that particular project. He said he had nothing to do with that project and that he was not involved with it whatsoever and did not apply his seals. Respondent had provided a statement acknowledging that he did provide, or that he did put Mr. Barsby's seal on it to get it through based on some pressure from the clients and whatnot to get the project pushed through. We verified that with the city of Flagstaff as well. It came to them for review. The reviewer looked at it, found some issues, and was wanting to confer with the engineer because of some deficiencies in the plans. That's when he reached out to Mr. Barsby and Mr. Murphy told him that it wasn't him. While we were talking to the city also found another set of plans that contained Mr. Varsby's seal and respondent's name on the plans. Those plans were known as the South Plan, or the, I apologize, let me double check my information before I give you the name of it. The South Park plans, another project in Flagstaff. And those particular plans, Mr. Varsby's seal appeared on it. When we reached out to Mr. Varsby about it, he acknowledged that he did in fact set his own seal on those plans for the initial drawings, but that he observed a modification made to one sheet that he did not approve of. So essentially the plans were approved by him, his seal was placed on them, and then the one sheet was modified and then pushed through without being resealed by the engineer. Respondent acknowledged that he did apply respondent's seal or a ledger seal upon it after modifying it without contacting him. While investigating this, it came apparent, and a ledger put it out there and explained the situation to us, that respondent and ledger had worked together in a previous firm, and that since that time they have had a working relationship unofficially, where a ledger would, or a respondent would provide a ledger with plans for projects. He would review them, stamp them, and send them back. He did acknowledge that respondent is not his employee, so we have concerns about that arrangement in general. So overall, we were able to verify that respondent placed a ledger seal on 7 sheets in the initial project and then 1 sheet on the second project without a ledger's knowledge or permission. Based on that, we put together a consent agreement with using our matrix to come up with a number for the 7 seals, rather 8 seals, plus the alleged violation of practicing engineering on 2 separate projects without a license. The respondent has declined to sign the seal and has come before us, and I believe he was one to address the board regarding the proposed consent agreement. So let me do that now.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Mr. Serrano.
Dear members of the board, my name is Paulo Serrano, current case 23084. I regrettably used Chris Parsby's seal on a small residential project on Freeze in Flagstaff. Without his review, per my response to the complaint filed with the board, I do take this very seriously and do not intend for something like this to happen again. I truly regret my actions and now ask the board to review the case and the punishment presented. The fine presented is $18,000 within a year's time, which significantly outweighs my financial gains on the project, which is roughly $2,200 on that specific project. I'm in no way trying to minimize the crime or violation, but believe in my case, the punishment doesn't fit the violation. Again, I sincerely apologize to the board and to Chris for this event and hope that the board will see this mistake for what it was, an unintentional human error. I respectfully ask the board to review and reduce the fine and or time period as to when the fee needs to be paid when considering the proposed consent agreement for my case. Again, I take full responsibility for my actions and mistake and understand I have to pay a fine, but believe the current presented $18,000 is a bit harsh with the violation committed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Trump, for coming in. Board, I'm going to open this up for discussion. Any questions for Mr. Stallone or Mr. Cartel?
Mr. Chair, it's Mike Lake. I would appreciate it if our enforcement manager would be willing to share the rationale behind the fine and why it is what it is.
Of course. So we followed the matrix that we've used and I've talked about in the past. Using the seal of another is a 2,000 across the board. There's no range for it. And so he, in this case, it was 8 different times that the seal was used, so 8 times 2,000. And then for the practice of engineering, it's, we went with 1,000 per. So it was 8 times on two different projects based on that matrix. And it is outlined on the offered or proposed consent agreement as to why there's that fee.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, just for the board's knowledge as well, the disciplinary guidance matrix is a tool developed in conjunction with the board. It does provide a starting point for consistency. However, certainly the board has the full panoply of disciplinary options available to it, as well as considering aggravating or mitigating circumstances in any individual case.
Board, any other discussion?
Yeah, this is Smith. How did the investigation go? Did you get along with each other, or was there any problems in the communication between you two?
No, Mr. Sarah has been very forthcoming and very honest and quick to respond.
Mr. Chair, Scott Sales. So just looking through all the information here, there was some good back and forth, and it's pretty clear with the information just as investigator mentioned that respondent did admit in writing, yes, I used these documents and placed the seal on them. And based on how it was, all the documents in there, if basically a third party hadn't of brought it up to the actual engineer in this case, we would not know this had ever occurred in the folks in the house and the other things, official structural calculation. Now, something that's not in here, it's probably not pertinent to the case, is whether, you know, calculations that had seals and stuff put to them were ever gone back and checked, but I assume the original sealer went back and adjusted things along the path, so, and maybe everything was right or not, but anyway, using someone else's seal without their knowledge, as we know, is based on the ARS 32-145-4. It's one of the things we keep seeing on these things, which is unfortunate. And then also in there, it was just interesting there, I saw the other charge, and I just want to just go a little bit further into it. The one related to basically the respondent practicing or offering to practice a board-regulated profession without registration, using the seals and sending it in and stuff, basically using that based on ARS 32-145, bracket 1. That was on two different occasions with two different seals in there. And looking through here, I guess I'll just close up with that. Were there any other documents that were ever sent around without the that you submitted to the city or anybody else using the seals that, without the engineer's knowledge?
No. The Hunkers project was just unfortunate. But
there's something to keep in there, even if a client's pushing on something, you know, it's up to the engineer and everybody to do their due diligence and be able to stand up and not push things through without the proper order. I don't have anything else, Mr. Chair, on that side. While the cost there of $2,000 per sheet may seem a little high, we're talking about a building with folks inside of there, and then just keeping the thoughts of health, safety, and welfare of the public at the top of our mind on everything. So I don't have anything else other than seeing this reasonable.
Board, any other discussion? Mr. Strong, we take using someone else's seal very, very seriously. And I guess I'm disturbed that you said it was unintentional. There's absolutely nothing unintentional about this. So, unless we hear anything else, I don't see any reason to make any revisions to this consent agreement. Board, we have a recommendation from staff to issue this consent agreement to Mr. Cerrone. If there's no other discussion, I'd like to get a motion.
Chair, this is Mike Flaga. I'll make a motion to offer the proposed consent agreements encompassing the order as noted in the recommendation, and if not signed within 30 days, we'll proceed to formal hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Flaga. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Do we have the same thing online yet? Is she coming in still? Okay. All right. I think we have a motion to offer the consent agreement. In conjunction with that, we have a recommendation from staff for the forward this case to the appropriate agency for possible criminal prosecution. That may come up in later. We also have a recommendation from staff to open up an investigation involving Mr. The registrant Christopher Varsley for any event. So that'll come, we're authorizing staff to start the investigation. We need a motion for that. Okay. All right. Then. Staff, please start the investigation, Mr. Varsley.
Thank you. Just as a question, would we be allowed by the board to forward this for criminal prosecution after this case has been settled and closed, or do we need to come back before you to get that authorization?
Ms. McDonald?
The board could authorize any investigator to take it to criminal prosecution or refer for criminal prosecution when appropriate.
Okay. Let's do that. At the appropriate time, we'll make the decision to move forward for prosecution.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, just to be clear, so when the investigator deems it the appropriate time or when we deem it the appropriate time? I took it as it's when the investigator deems it the appropriate time, they would then hold it.
You'll come back before the board?
It wouldn't have to. The board could authorize the investigator to take it when the investigator feels it's the appropriate time based upon the conclusion of this case.
Does that work?
Yeah, I just didn't want it to be held up or have to come back up to me or up to us to be able to have this decision. And then I guess another question on top of that is, at the conclusion of this case, would that be when there's everything with the signed consent agreement and payment, or in between there somewhere?
The conclusion of the case would be either when it were concluded through an entry into a consent agreement or the board accepting, modifying, or rejecting an administrative law judge decision in the case.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cartel, thank you. Mr. Strong, appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is my fault, but I'm just going to put in the record that I need to step out for a project interview with the conference, so I will return this to the
very good. Fortunes don't have a forum. Good luck with your interview. I'd like to jump out of sequence if I could. And we have a presentation by the Arizona Department of Transportation involving digital. Let's get time to do it again. Yeah, let's do that. All right. Please come. We have an ADOT representative here. Please present yourself and share your presentation.
Sure. Good morning, Chairman Gilmore, members of the board. My name is Audra Merrick, and I'm the Deputy State Engineer, and I'm here to present digital delivery here today. So we're really excited to be able to bring this before you. I am sitting a little off to the side because I'm used to seeing my presentation as I'm speaking, so bear with me on that part. So if we can have that second slide, please, when you have a chance. So my purpose here really today is just bring your awareness to digital delivery, talk about what digital delivery is to ADOT, what we've done so far, how we'd like to move forward. Also continue to build continued interest and support from industry and from our stakeholders. And also communication. Have that platform to share ideas, to ask questions, to learn and to seek input. Next slide, please. So first, what is ADOT's digital delivery initiative is always a good question. This might be a little confusing, so kind of bear with me. So what we're doing is we're looking to replace our construction plan format of our delivery process and replace it with a design bid process using 2D, 3D technology modeling, and deliver our design documents, delivering them with a model and doing it digitally. And what I mean by that, it might be hard for me to multitask with this, holding this one. And what I mean by that is, here is an example that I have is just what we do today. This is a plan set. This is kind of probably a medium-sized project. Some of our projects are much thicker than this, and we have a few that are thinner. And so what it does is the user has to actually look at the 2D plan set and visualize. Thank you. A little cumbersome up here. And visualize really that 3D component. So you have people out in the field looking at plan sheets, flipping, looking at cross sections, trying to visualize that 3D component. And then what we're trying to do is remove that and replace it with a 2D, 3D modeling, where you have people out in the field, say with an iPad, and are looking at a model and can actually see that three-dimensional component. Next slide, please. Oh, and one thing I failed to mention is we're looking at delivering our projects with that method by the end of 2025. So you might ask yourself, why are we doing this? Well, we believe in continuous improvement. And we believe that the continued modernization of delivering projects in this manner is better for the citizens of Arizona. It will deliver higher quality, be more cost effective. We're looking at improving the design and construction efficiencies, also helping us with our asset management side of the house when you have all this stuff digitally, and then reducing overall project costs. Next slide, please. So where are we at today? What have we done so far? How are we moving forward? Well, we've already completed two planning documents for this at the end of the last fiscal year. So now we have a program guidance document and an implementation plan. If you can move to the next slide. The program guidance document really looks at just the national efforts of digital delivery. It looks at our readiness for digital delivery. It looks at where we're at now in our processes, where we want to be, and it did a gap analysis looking at where that need is at. And it made some recommendations. We took those recommendations then, and we rolled them into an implementation plan. Can you go to the next slide? An implementation plan really identifies our mission, our vision, our key objectives. It proposes a multi-year roadmap. This isn't happening tomorrow. It's going to be over the course of years. It is a phased approach. And it proposes a slightly different organizational structure than what we have today to do something like this. And then identifies some focus areas. Next slide. The implementation plan also consists of a training tool. As you can imagine, there's a lot of individuals that need to be trained, whether it's through the design or through the construction. When we start working with the model. Next slide. And then also, obviously, we have a communication item as well. This communication will be needed to make this successful. Next slide. So this is our multi-year map. You can see communication is the banner that goes completely across the page from one side to the other. It's essential to making this successful. This communication is internal and external to ADOT, so it does include industry and stakeholders as well. We did kick off the project in December of 22, where we created the guidance document and the implementation plan that we just completed at the end of the fiscal year. You can see as we move forward, as we progress through the years, we're looking at developing the model and the delivery standards to be able to do this digitally. Education and training as a component. We'll have some pilot projects involved as well. And you can also see on the top that we'll start with the roadway modeling first, and then we'll move on to the bridge modeling second. Next slide. This is our organizational structure. It's a little bit difficult to see in the PowerPoint, probably easier to see on the PDFs that you all have. So I am the executive champion for digital delivery, and I'll serve on the executive leadership team for this. And what we have is two digital delivery leads, and they are in the audience today, Mike and Reza, and I'll call them up here in a few minutes. And they will be working with three committees that we're going to have set up. We're going to have a governance committee, a steering committee, and a technical committee. So the governance committee will set the overall strategic direction on how to move all this forward. The steering committee will implement that strategic direction and also taking into account the business needs. And then the technology component will be responsible for the technology implementation. Some of those committees will have members of AGC, our contractors, and ACEC, our consultants, on those as well. So they're not just an FHWA, our federal partner. So they're just not ADOT internal. And then also, we will be working with industry and the stakeholders, including AGC, which are our contractors, ACEC, which are our consultants, Technical Board Administration, which you all, of course, we want to make sure the model is secure, stamps are secure. We all have that same interest. And we have a consultant on board, too, which is HDR. Next slide. So what are our key next steps? First, I wanted to personally thank you all. We did put in a grant application. I can never remember this. Advanced Digital Construction Management System, ADCMS. We did submit the grant application, and I'd like to thank you for the letter of support that was provided. We also received letter of supports from AGC, ACEC, MAG and PAG, which is Maricopa and Pima Council of Governments. So thank you for that. We hope to hear the results of that by winter. And so when we have those results, we'll be sure to let Judith know, and she can pass that information along to you all. And second, as far as key steps go, we're going to be engaging communications more with industry and our stakeholders than what we have been. And then also third, I'm really looking at that implementation plan. And what we're going to be doing is preparing a software assessment, so looking at the software and seeing what additional tools we might need or see if we have enough. And we have kind of a feel for that already. And we're going to be creating the digital standards and procedures that we don't have existing today. And then we'll be initiating and development some just-in-time training. And what we mean by that is we're planning to train individuals as we move along instead of training and then, you know, expecting them to remember, you know, a year later on what they learned and no one remembers. So we're going to try to implement training as we go along. So you'll see us work with our, say, our design staff first. And we're going to be doing some pilots, you know, grabbing those construction staff, you know, teaching them how to work with models, so on and so forth. And then once we do our pilots, we can roll back in and look at, you know, the standards and procedures that we've created and see if we need to make any modifications. Next slide. So we're excited. We're excited about digital delivery. We're excited that everyone is interested in moving this forward with us. We understand it'll be a heavy lift, but we're still excited to work on it and work on it with everyone for the state of Arizona. And that's all I have for you today. I'd be more than happy to take any questions. Chairman Gilmore, if it'd be okay with you, I'd like to bring Mike and Reza up in case you have any questions. They're more the technical part of all this. Is that okay? Great, thanks.
Of course. Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. I'm assuming we can answer or ask questions on this without being agendized.
Right.
Or is it agenda?
It is agenda.
Well,
yeah,
it is agenda. We just jumped.
Just for reference, we are under agenda item 8 C. Thank you.
Joan, please identify yourself and give us a kind of a quick summary of how you're involved here.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Mike Van Bleiker, and I serve as the state roadway engineer at ADOT, and I've been serving as the co-lead on the development of our digital delivery program.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. My name is Reza Kagan. I'm the lead on digital delivery, along with Mike, and we're striving to do our best to get this program up and running. And I've been with ADOT for 27 years.
Mr. Sales, you have a question? Just that it's going to be interesting. Looking forward to seeing how it all is going to roll. I know we got a little more time left in there, so I know it's going to evolve a little bit. It's just it's going to be interesting for all the engineers out there. I'm going to just pick one little instance of, okay, you know, right now it's black and white, it's on the page. It's there's dimensions listed out, and that's what governs and what's sealed. You know, going forward with this, there's going to be an electronic line in a CAD file that is now the dimension, so to say, so that that is what they would build off of. So, say all the engineers out there, and really, you know, all the engineers that are going to be using it, you know, make sure that your line is the right length and everything in there. So, can't rely on the dimension to make a little change at the last minute. You have to update that CAD file. So.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. I got a couple of questions. Obviously, you're out talking to all the general contractors, the big guys, they do all the motor. I'm having trouble kind of picturing some of these guys in the D9 looking at their tab while they're driving these things. Is this all new software? Do you have to train all these general contractors how to use this equipment?
Some of the general contractors actually use it today. They use some of that modeling in their equipment. There will be training needed from an ADOT standpoint, from our construction staff, because they're not used to working in that model environment. They're used to working off of plan set like you see here today. So that's going to definitely be the heavy lift group, for sure.
How are you going to track field changes? Do those go through another process? Does the FDA documents updated and restamped?
Chairman, members of the board, I didn't hear the beginning of your question. I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
There's always field changes during construction. When RFIs go out or change orders, all that will be, I guess, processed almost immediately. And how do you establish that chain of what is current and what is stamped and as a record set?
Chairman, members of the board, that's part of the fun. It's part of the fun of securing those models and the engineering stamp and what was approved initially and what was approved subsequently. And those are the things that we'll be working on. But the intent is similar to what you have as-built today, where our construction staff modify, you know, this PDF. We'll be modifying that model for as-built.
Okay, thank you. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, Mr. Gilmer, that's I think as it goes forward, that's going to be a very interesting point of part of this whole thing. As one is you get the plan set, that might almost be, say, the easy part. It's what do you do in construction when you have a CAD file and it's a resident engineer out in the field and they're saying, hey, we want to make this change, and they're going in to modify the sheet, or is it sent back to the engineer of record to modify it? So I know they're going to be cranking away with this, and I got some good staff there, so it's going to be interesting to see the final document. 2026,
you said? We want to start implementing by the end of 2025, but we'll be doing pilots. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, this is Judith. So I just have a quick question, maybe to help the board members understand where we are at as a state. So as you work with your national partners, can you give us a feel of nationally where Arizona is at in this digital delivery model?
Yeah, so Chairman Gilmore, members of the board, we're not the first, we're not the last. Utah and Pennsylvania are probably leading more of the efforts, and we're probably a little after that. Texas just kicked it off, and a few other states, but it's part of FHWA's desires for the states across the nation.
Is there any communication between the jurisdictions that have already kind of are a little bit ahead of us with that transition, sharing any potential, let's say, hiccups, things like that, that would help smooth the road for your
process?
Yes, of course, Judith, Chairman and Gilman, members of the board. We started there. We reached out to Pennsylvania. We reached out to Utah. We are in consistent conversations with them. We've gained some of their lessons learned and tried to start there instead of rebuilding from the beginning. That's one of the luxuries of not being first, is we can learn from others and mistakes that they've made. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, so looking through this, based on what's been on the screen and provided through the PDF, which was very nice because sometimes it was easier to look at my screen here than way over there. I didn't see anything in here personally that seemed to change to say not work with the rules and regulations that are in place right now. But I know as we move forward, as this develops and is ongoing, if you would like to submit it to the board staff to be able to take a look at, the last thing I think any of us up here would want is that it gets implemented and there might be some something that doesn't quite work with any of the rules or statutes that we have here. Let's roll out nice, I think, and if that requires some way to look ahead of time, then let's have that conversation sooner. So as things are going and moving forward, feel free to share as you wish with Judith and the rest of the staff there. We'll look at it.
Yes, thank you for that comment. Chairman Gilmore, members of the board, that is our intent. We're here to really introduce you to get a feel so you're not surprised. You have an idea what we're doing, where we're coming from. We don't know yet if we're going to request changes or not. Scott had mentioned, we just don't have that level of detail yet. But we do plan on working with you and collaborating with you as we move forward for sure. Our interests are the same. So thanks.
Your grant application, the Advanced Digital Construction Management System, I didn't catch the purpose of that grant. Could you please clarify what the purpose of the grant application is?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman, members of the board. It's really to accelerate the implementation plan. We do have some operational money here today, which allows us to move forward on some of the tasks that I showed you. With that grant money, it will allow us to accelerate it a little bit quicker and do things faster since we are creating processes and digital standards. That will be a lot of work right there, and so those additional fundings will help us really just implement it in general.
And who's the sponsor of the grant? Who's the funding source?
I believe it's FHWA, correct? Yeah.
That's the Federal Highway Department.
Thanks. I know we throw in the acronyms, right? Federal Highway Administration.
And so funding rates of that agency are typically around 25%. Or is that right? Do you know?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I'm wondering, my question is, if you do not receive that grant, what is the agency plan for additional funding?
Sure. So, Chairman Gilmore, members of the board, we'll still continue on with digital delivery. It just might be at a slower rate because of, those additional funds. But we'll still continue forward with the plan that I showed you today.
Thank you. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I can imagine that the Federal Highway Administration, as you work so closely together, or they work so closely with each state's Department of Transportation, would be completely on board and supportive of states moving to digital delivery.
Yeah, our chairman and Gilmore, members of the board, yes, FHWA does support this initiative moving forward for the states. So thank you.
Board, any other questions? Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Blinker.
Raise a county bandit.
Thank you. Exciting.
Yes, thank you.
I won't do that much in our work, but I'll look forward to maybe a follow-up and you guys can do a roadshow for us. No pun intended. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Could we take item 7C2?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, board, I'm going to take this item 7C2, which is P23073. Mr. Fudd, I think Mr. Neff, you are here.
Mr. Chairman, I also have to say, I think the ledger, Mr. Gagel is also online.
Gagel, are you online, please?
Good morning, yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Cartel, can you give board a synopsis of this complaint, please?
Yes, sir. So on January 16th of this year, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent failed to retain records to include survey maps, CAD drawings, and field notes for a survey done on lot number 139 of the Sonoyta Estates in Santa Cruz County, Arizona, and failed to record the survey as required. It was also alleged that respondent recorded a survey for lot number 135 of the same community, but did not record that survey until 9 years later. In reviewing the complaint, from what I understand from it, the alleger came across this information. He's a land surveyor as well. And he came across this information while doing a survey of his own in the same community several years later. In reaching out to a respondent, he provided a response. He acknowledged that he did not record the survey for lot number 135, and that when a ledger brought it to his attention, he did record it immediately after it is. We were able to later verify with the county that it had been recorded at that time. However, that was several years after the survey itself. Regarding the allegation that he did not maintain his records, he indicated that alleger just didn't give him a chance to search his records for them and provide them. He did provide those records to us fairly quickly after receiving the notice of investigation, verifying that he did in fact have those records. Regarding lot number 139, his statement was that he did not record the survey because his client didn't want to incur the additional costs. We set this up for a couple of assessments with two of our EAC members. Both EAC members verified that the survey for lot number 139 was still required to be recorded per our standards. And they gave him credit for recording 135 when it was brought to his attention, but acknowledged that it was not done so within the 90 days. The EAC members also gave him credit for having the records and providing those to us within a reasonable time within the request. After receiving the assessments, we put together a consent agreement addressing the fact that both surveys have not been recorded within the time frame listed in our standards. I apologize, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. So those assessments were provided to respondent. In response to that, he did move forward on his own without any prompting from us and recorded lot number 139 and provided evidence of having done so to us. However, we did put together a consenting agreement addressing the fact that both were done significantly after the 90 days as prescribed by our standards.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cartel. Mr. Neff or Mr. Do you have a board position on this?
Yeah, my name is Jeff Neff, and I'm counsel for Mr. Putt. Can everybody hear me okay? Good. All right. First of all, we don't disagree with the findings of fact at all. What we propose is lesser penalties. And what I'd like to do is tell you what those are. I'd like to introduce Mr. Putt. He may have a little bit of a statement later. And tell you why I think there are some circumstances that have not been taken into account here. First of all, we would ask that the board revise their discipline to a letter of concern. And and that the probation be removed. Now, Mr. Putt is not contesting the penalties. He's willing to pay the penalties. In fact, got a check today to do that if that's appropriate. And although I'd like to kind of background my client just a little bit. First, he's been a registered land surveyor here without any discipline at all for 43 years. And for 12 years as a certified federal land surveyor. So he's also served the community. He's a charter member of the Arizona Professional Land Surveyors Association, which is a group that intends to create professional communication between the parties, the land surveying community. He also served as president of the SOAR chapter for 3 years and was president in 1990. So that's a positive thing. He's made contributions to the surveying community, and it seems awfully harsh to get on your license suspended, even though I get just literally called probation after that length of time. So the first consideration I think the board should take into account is the fact that he has been truthful, responsive, and he does no previous violations. He has no pattern of conduct previous to these two, I'll call them errors. And that he has actually gone above and beyond. He's going to review all of his prior surveys to see if any of them haven't been recorded. Now, I'd like to also say there's no technical deficiencies in those surveys at all. There are also lots in a subdivision which he found no variances on. I think there's, if you look at the harm to the public, they're the same as established by the plat. So he didn't do anything, he didn't find a boundary variance or anything like that, or anything that would mean that if you recorded the survey that you'd make any significant change in the change in title or anything. The other thing is, I kind of believe this as maybe a misunderstanding on his part, at least just with this one survey. I think it's an extenuating circumstance when your client says don't record it. Kind of raises the question of to whom do you owe your duty? Do you owe your duty to the statute, the board regulation, or do you owe your duty to the client? Now, as an attorney, I serve a client. I know it's different in some circumstances with the Board of Technical Registration and Registrants. But I would point out that, I mean, if you're buying a piece of property, I'm basically a real estate lawyer, you could waive statutory warranties and say, I'll take it as is. I'll waive the statutory warranty. So my thought is that, and he won't do this in the future, but he will record all those surveys in the future. But this is kind of an extenuating circumstance. Your client says, well, don't do it, and you don't do it. And, yeah, okay, you get in trouble for it, but it's not with malice or it's not with lack of intent. There is lack of intent to violate. So the second factor that the board should at least look at here is that after 43 years of being a surveyor, there's 5 complaints by Mr. Pagel against Mr. Putt. It's a desire to kind of maybe perhaps drive him out of business, something like that. Now, we're not contesting that there are violations here, but I think that idea of some animus ought to be considered, and the board shouldn't be swayed by just this one violation. It should look at the whole record. And now, as far as mitigating factors here, I think I've covered those. There's no safety or health violations, and he's gone beyond corrective action proposed in the order. And he's going to go and see if he can report any other survey that's outstanding. Now, I kind of like to take the matrix and talk about the disciplinary matrix and its policy E5, I believe. And, you know, examining the monetary penalties, they began at level 3 out of 10. And that's
it's really a very low-level violation, although the $500 does go up to level 5. But I think it starts at 3, and I think this would be considered like a level 3 case. I point out that, I mean, I can't extensively look at all the board's actions, but I would point out that I've found 3 cases where there were actually technical violations combined with a failure to record. That's the Keith case, 23049. And that guy there only got 6 months. And there's a couple of other cases where similar to that, Bernal and Reynolds, where they got 6 months too. And they messed up technically. Mr. Klatt hadn't messed up technically. He did an adequate and appropriate survey, meeting all the standards. He just failed to record. So, the question is, why is it necessary to basically put him on probation for the 1 year? He is willing to pay the penalties. No remedial courses are needed for him to make sure he complies with the order. When I was checking around, I do think that the reason for putting someone on probation like this is to make sure they comply with things. There's no previous, and the two things that are in that order are obey all laws, and second, renew his registration. Well, if we sign the order today, his registration doesn't expire until about 6 months after that. I think it's December 31st, 2024, so again, that's kind of nothing that's going to be of any importance. He has consistently agreed that he's willing to obey all laws. There's nothing in his prior history that says he's not going to. In fact, he's a bit of a Boy Scout, which I use as a positive term. So at this point, what I like to do is just turn it over to Mr. Cudd to just make a short statement to the board. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cudd. Thank you. Good morning. So my name is David Putt, RLS 13019. I've been here a long time. I'd like to thank the board members for working to protect the safety, health, and welfare of the public. Thank you to Daniel Cardell and the EAC for their work and investigation of the complaints. I'd like to begin by saying that at my core, I am a rule follower. I was a rule follower before and after becoming an Eagle Scout when I was a teenager and a Boy Scout. Scouting was a big part of my life, and in fact, I can still recite the 12 laws of scouting. As a professional land surveyor, my policy has always been to follow the Arizona Revised Statutes, the Arizona Administrative Code, and the substantive policy statements of the Arizona Board of Technical Registration. As Mr. Neff stated, I am a charter member of the Arizona Professional Land Surveyors, APLS, and have been an active member since its inception. APLS was created to serve as an organized way for surveyors to civilly discuss differences of opinion and learn from one another. The Arizona Boundary Survey minimum standards were not prepared as a hammer to harass and punish fellow surveyors, but as a means of reviewing the behavior of surveyors that were consistently incompetent and unprofessional. The standard of practice has been to contact the other survey to discuss the survey. Filing a complaint was a last resort if the other surveyor was unresponsive. Filing a complaint should not be done as a punitive act. I've always encouraged surveyors to talk to one another and share information, especially when there is a difference of opinion. I have always provided copies of my surveys to any surveyor that requests them, and I readily discuss my surveys. As a land surveyor registered in Arizona since 1980, it has always been my practice to work with other land surveyors. For over 42 years, there has not been a single complaint against me, either from clients or colleagues, and my professional judgment has never been called into question. I have a strong working relationship with a wide community of professional surveyors, and I know that I can reach out at any time if I encounter a survey issue that needs additional analysis or consultation. Additionally, I have mentored at least half a dozen people that have gone on to become registered land surveyors. In the case in question, there has been no harm to the safety, health, and welfare of the public or other surveyors. There were no material discrepancies with the survey work or alternate locations for the lot corners. There was no difference of opinion in this case. I acknowledge that I was deficient in recording the surveys. I have instituted new policies to prevent this from happening in the future. I am addressing any unrecorded past surveys of my own accord, so no probation is necessary. While I cannot go back to the past to record all my surveys within a 9-day period after completion, I am working to address this issue to the best of my ability. I respectfully request that the consent agreement be revised from a letter of reprimand to a letter of concern. I also respectfully request that there be no probation, and I agree to pay the penalties at the time that I sign the consent agreement if it does not include probation. Thank you for your consideration in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Pepp. Board, questions, discussion? Mr. Cagle, can you give us a brief summary on your position?
Yes, good morning, Board. There were several things I heard from Mr. Putt's attorney and also Mr. Putt himself that's quite disturbing. Based on my evidence and the evidence of this case, I hear the word, I'm a rule follower. Well, if you're a rule follower, you would record your survey by law. And you're recording these surveys, okay, for the public record, and that is to protect the public. It's for the welfare of the public. It's not just for following a rule. And then I also heard Mr. Putt's attorney say this is an isolated incident, this one violation. Well, as you'll find out, I've already discovered more than 5 or 6 unrecorded surveys, okay, from Mr. Putt just in the last year. So this is not an isolated incident. This is an ongoing, perpetuated behavior of somebody who does not follow the law. So, or the rules, if he so adequately pointed out, he's a rule follower. And something else that's slightly disturbing is his lawyer went on with this harangue about he has 43 years of professional experience. He was ahead of our Saguaro chapter. He was ahead of APLSA. Yet this is a guy for decades who did not record his surveys. Okay, so no, I don't see where sympathy should be involved here. And you're going to find out in a myriad of my other complaints that Mr. Putt has continued not to record, okay, even up to 2018, just a few years ago. Okay. So this is a real problem within our community.
Thank you for your position here. Board, discussion.
Yeah, hi, Stan Clutt. I do have a question. How many more surveys have you come across that have not been recorded?
You're going to come across this in a myriad of other
cases. Speak and answer, Clutt. Oh.
I don't know how many. I know there's several out there. I also know that I'm not the only one in my surveying community that has failed to record the surveys. Now, two wrongs don't make a right, and I acknowledge that. But on a weekly basis, I myself find many other survey corners in the field that do not have records of surveys. So there has been a standard of practice wherein a lot of surveys don't get recorded. However, In my career, I have recorded hundreds of surveys in the counties in which I work. So it's not that I don't record my surveys. When I first started in this profession, 43 years ago, the recording law was not as strong as it is today. Back then, it was material discrepancies. So for over half my career, that was the norm, was for people to use their professional judgment as to what surveys might need to be recorded.
Okay. And then one other, I guess, issue or concern that I have is that you're letting the client dictate the standards, the Arizona State standards, as far as recording. So it's in place for a reason, to protect the public, not just the client.
I understand that and I acknowledge that. And the reality is, I don't let the client dictate my practice.
I have a question. Why wouldn't you record it? I mean, what's the advantage of not recording?
There is no advantage to not recording. It was purely an oversight. I understand, and enough with the size in the background here, you know. But anyway, I understand the importance of recording the surveys, especially now that as I'm older, I realize this is my legacy. But and I'm on my own, making amends as best as I can to do that.
Mr. Putt, thanks for coming in today. So, one, I just wanted clarification. There was some discussion in there about five complaints and then no complaints. I think you mentioned like something about five complaints. I just wanted, for the record, to make sure I understood what those were.
There have been five complaints filed, yes, that's your five. This is the third. Two have been dismissed. Two are still under investigation.
Thanks for that clarification. I just wanted to make sure that was...
I just want to make sure I answer your question.
Yeah, that answers that question. And then another last one would be, just as a side note, so from the original scope and fee that were put together to record that original document, was that paid in full, or was there a portion held back because you didn't record anything?
No, it was paid in full.
But I make a clarification. Yeah. By understanding, he didn't charge him for recording the survey. He just billed for the survey work because the client said, well, don't record the survey. And unfortunately, I think of the misunderstanding on his part that he didn't do it. He should have done it. I agree.
Mr. Putt, in your practice, you indicated that you do find ones that have not, or the survey's not been recorded. Do you call them, the surveyor, and say, hey, I'm in here, I found this, you need to report it?
It depends. Generally, yes, I will call them up and say, hey, I found one of your corners. Do you have a survey that you can send to me? And most often they will say, yes, I have a copy of the survey, I'll get it to you. And I will let them know that they should get that recorded, yes.
Board discussion?
Yeah, I have another question. I'm not real familiar with the survey thing, but if you don't record it, is it more expensive the next time that it is surveyed? Or if it was recorded, is it less expensive? Is there a cost benefit as the surveyor by not recording it? I mean, are they going to keep charge more money or something like that?
Well, it depends on the survey. As a surveyor, we're always looking for information. So if we can find a copy of a recorded survey, that will definitely help us. However, that's said with a caveat. The majority of the surveyors know who does good work and who maybe does not do such good work. So if you see a survey, even though it's recorded by someone that you don't respect, that the survey community doesn't respect, it may indeed cost you more money to do that survey, because now you have to figure out why that other person, that other surveyor, did what they did. So a survey, a recorded survey, can help. Sometimes it can cost more. I would say generally it would help. And maybe it costs less. There is still a certain level of work that has to be done for every survey. And so having a recorded survey may not help a lot to reduce the cost.
Board discussion, are you satisfied with the order? It seems to be, I'm going to give Mr. Platt some credit for 43 years of such experience, no complaints, and his contribution to the industry. This did go off case assessment, and obviously they confirmed the fact that he did not record, and I think he's learned his lesson, but I guess I'm inclined to support a letter of concern, but I want to open this up for discussion. And the fact that the survey was correct, there wasn't a fault with his work, except finding that point on the curve and not recording it. So that's what he submitted that, and the other case assessments confirmed it as well. So I guess I'm inclined to support a letter of concern versus the suspension and probation.
Yes, this is Dana Clett. I've kind of been going back and forth with that as well. I really hope that through this process that you create new processes for recording the surveys, contractual agreements with the clients, the settings at that property corner, you're by law required to record that survey. I'm in agreement with Mr. Gilmore, letter of concern, so I'd like to make a motion unless there's more conversation.
Board, any discussion? Okay, Ms. Clutch.
I'd like to make a motion to offer a letter of concern, as well as the administrative penalty fees in the amount of $1,000.
Mr. Chair, board members, so a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary action. So that's the end of it right there. If you have any questions about what was proposed in the consent agreement as far as the disciplinary action and the stayed suspension and probation, let's make sure everybody's clear on what's what.
Yeah, and just for the record, there can't be any collection of costs and fees or any administrative penalties associated with a letter of concern. That would simply be a letter of concern.
Although we would voluntarily pay them. Don't know if that's even possible here.
Okay, let me try that again. I'd like to motion or propose a letter of concern, motion a letter of concern for case number P23073.
Very good. Can I get a second, please, to that motion?
This is Clay Lager, I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion to, in effect, not issue this consent agreement and convert this to a letter of concern. This is for P23073. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Is that aye? Ms. Lingren?
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Aye. Opposed.
Okay. We have one opposition. Mr. Blake is still out. So that motion carries. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. And Mr. Putt, obviously, I think you'll get all your surveys recorded from now on. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. This is case number 24009.
Jackie, I'm going to butcher your last name. I'm sorry. Can you identify yourself, please?
Jackie Becky from Jackie Becky Design.
Okay. And counsel?
Thank you, Chairman. Joel Sands from the law firm. You can also have Wayne here for responding.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Crawford, can you give us a synopsis, please?
Certainly. On July 20th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent was hired in October 2022 for a home renovation project in Scottsdale, Arizona, after she represented herself as an architect and engineer. It is also alleged that since at least 2015, respondent has been representing herself to home and business owners as an architect and or engineer to secure their building and development projects. It is also alleged that respondent firm engaged in the practice of architecture and engineering without firm registration. Board records show no indication that respondent or respondent firm have ever been registered with the board. During the course of this investigation, board staff spoke with Ms. Becky and counsel, and they indicated that they were, at the time, unaware that they were able to utilize the terms engineer or architect without registration with the board. Upon notification, respondent removed all references to such words and services from all websites under her control and requested that it be removed from third-party websites. A proposed consent agreement was presented to respondent, which was signed and is before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Would you give us a summary of your position?
Chairman Gilmore, members of the board, after becoming aware of the complaint, Bethke Design and Ms. Bethke immediately modified all of their websites and other social media to remove any reference to architect or engineer. And they've also contacted third parties who have non-static websites that refer to Ms. Bethke as an architect or an engineer and ask them to remove those references from those third-party websites. There are certain static websites, newspaper articles that are posted like PDFs that can't be changed. One point that we want to make is Bethke Design is a national firm, and not every state has the same regulations regarding reference to architect or engineer. We've now conformed the marketing materials to meet Arizona guidelines, although guidelines in other states where Bethke Design might perform services as an interior designer might not require the same type of restrictions as to presentation as an architect or an engineer. The other point we would make is Ms. Bethke and Bethke Design never did act as an architect or engineer on any project, including this project. If there is architectural or engineering work that needs to be done, that would be a stamped, certified, sealed plan. Though that work is presented to professionals who are licensed. Ms. Bethke has never stamped a plan as an architect and engineer and never represented that she had the ability to stamp a plan as an architect or an engineer. Interior design involves the coordination of interior design with architecture and engineering. And the purpose of the marketing is only to say that Ms. Bethke is capable of coordinating the type of work that might require architecture or engineering, not that Ms. Bethke or Bethke Design ever actually did that work themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you good with that statement?
Yes.
Okay. Board, questions?
Discussion? Chairman?
Who's talking?
This is the complainant, Brian Wilson-Abel, so I'm here.
Okay. Can you give us a brief summary of your position here, please?
I would like to. So thank you very much for inviting me here today and inviting me to present today before the board. The representation made by Ms. Bethke's attorney right now, Ms. Bethke, is in fact false. Ms. Bethke, this is a complaint against Ms. Bethke, not against her design firm. This complaint itself is that Ms. Bethke herself represents herself as both an architect and engineer and has been doing so since 2015. In fact, on LinkedIn, on her website, on Instagram, on Houzz, she represents herself as a quote-unquote award-winning architect and engineer, repeatedly. As far as removing, as her counsel just stated, as far as removing these representations from her site, in fact, false. is, I believe this, and I don't have it in front of me, I believe the complaint was filed in August, the investigation happened in August. Ms. Bethke on her Instagram site, and I'll play it for you right now just so you can hear it in her own voice, posted an interview with Build Magazine that was just completed on September 7th. And in that interview, Ms. Bethke represents herself again as an architect. And again, she talks about her background as an electrical engineer. Not her firm, not that she hires it. She herself represents herself as an electrical engineer and as an architect in this that she just posted. She just posted. So it's a fallacy, the presentation made today, that in fact, this is about Ms. Bethke's firm. There's confusion over a firm. There's confusion over whether a firm can hire an architect. That's not what this is about. This is about Ms. Bethke, who has never received a degree in architecture, who has never received a degree as an engineer, repeatedly representing herself as such, and in her own words, practicing as an architect. Practicing as an architect. So before any consent decree is entered, and again, I'll play you her words for you. You can hear it in her own voice. This is just one segment of an hour and 7 minute interview that she provided. And she posted herself to her own Instagram site about her being an architect and engineer. So let me go ahead and play it for you. This is at minute 7:15 of this, and hopefully you can hear it.
We can't hear that, but the point made, I think your point's well presented.
Yes, so let me go and say, she says in this interview, and you can pull it up yourselves on Instagram, she says in here, she worked as an architect for Platinum Builders on several of their projects, and how lucky she was to do so. And then she goes ahead and says, while she's not the right architect for everybody, she is for many. She says it in her own voice, in this piece that she just posted. So we can go ahead and play with words all we wish, but in Ms. Bethke's own words, just 2.5 weeks ago, she just posted yet another interview where she identifies herself as an architect. So again, let's separate out the fact that her firm can hire an architect or engineer from the fact of her repeated representation since 2015 of herself as both an architect and an engineer. In fact, when my wife and I hired Ms. Bethke, before hiring her, that firm, she represented to us that she was an architect and engineer. She represented herself as both. We went online to do the research, and all over the internet, not only the quote-unquote static articles that her counsel refers to here, but again, right throughout the entire website, in her websites and other people's websites, these awards that she keeps on announcing that she wins, she represents that she is an award-winning architect and engineer, not a firm, she. Now I ask you, Ms. Bethke is sitting right there, Ms. Bethke, have you ever received a degree as an architect or as an engineer? Ever?
Mr. Chair, the various persons appearing before the board really aren't able to ask each other questions. They're here to present to the
Mr.
board.
Abrams, you've given us a thorough summary of your position here. I want to open it up.
Yes.
Thank
you.
We're done. I want to open up discussion by the board.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. In light of those, yeah, I'm going to pause for a second. Somebody else wants to take the question first. I'll get myself straight up.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious, and Mr. Dennis, thank you. You indicated that Ms. Bethke has removed all references as an engineer and architect on all of her advertising and websites, but I'm curious about this claim on September the 7th, I think you said, this Instagram.
Chairman Gilmore, members of the board, this is the first that we've heard of that. There are multiple marketing materials. Ms. Bethke has marketing professionals who post on her Instagram. if that happens, we'll take that video off as well. There's no intent to tell the board that we're going to scrub any references to architecture and engineer and then not do it. And we've gone to great lengths to change any. Every time we see a reference to architecture or engineer, Ms. Bethke then coordinates with her marketing professionals to remove those references. So if there was a reference that came in on September 7th, that would be removed as well.
And realistically, by the time that gets on air, the recording is probably done sooner.
I'm hesitant to make a lot of statements as I am in a lawsuit with Mr. Abrams, so I do want to put that on the record. But I can say that we use outside marketing companies. Since this complaint, we have deployed a full investigation into everything that has been posted, and that the difference between myself as an individual and Jackie as a firm has been confusing, and for that I thank Mr. Abram for bringing that to our attention. Those posts are done or put together for 6 or 8 months at a time. This interview was actually granted over a year and a half ago to Build Magazine, and through our contract partners, we do engage the architects on projects and work very closely with them and the engineers, and that is a part and party of our job. So, you know, we have and will continue. We are going to do a full rebrand of the company as well to better dissociate myself from the actual firm. And, you know, I thank you guys for being, you know, so professional. And, you know, it is something that I intend on straightening away.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Wait a minute, Mr. Abel. Hold on, Abel. Mr. Abrams, sorry.
Yeah.
Health, safety, welfare, that's kind of our mantra here. And when you ask the general public and say, I can do architecture, I can do engineering, there is an expectation that you can do those if you're not registered with this board or in the state that requires that. So you can use those terms. So that's the basis of all this. So you've signed a consent agreement. Appreciate that. Ms. Crawford, is there anything else you need to share with the board on this issue?
I would just like to state for the record that I did the verification of the social media and websites on September 5th, which would predate this alleged video that was put onto the Instagram. But as for the consent agreement, it does encompass both individual as well as firm.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I may also clarify, the consent agreement has in the conclusions of law, the potential violation that she may have offered to practice or held herself out to practice a board regulated profession.
Thank you. Mr. Sales?
Yeah, just for Ms. Bethke on the thing. So since the items that are posted on, what was it? Instagram there. So I don't know the title exactly of there. Is it your name? Would people assume that you actually post it and not the marketing firm? Or is it clear that, hey, this is a name posted by such and such?
I couldn't actually answer that question because I don't do any posting, so it likely 100% was done by the marketing agency.
The folks such looking for work or looking for your services may go there and see the name and go, okay, well, this is posted by, they might have you. That's where I'm going with this. It seems like there's probably an appearance, like whether you posted or not, it came under your account, your name, just that appearance.
And we will continue to, you know, get into that. We are, again, going through a full rebrand of the company to make sure that that confusion no longer exists.
Mr. Chair, can I please, for a second?
I'm going to give you, 30 seconds.
Thanks. So we're concerned about the health and safety. This isn't about a rebrand or Ms. FD keep posting. This is in her own voice, her stating that she's an architect and worked as an architect with Platinum Builders. So in the interest of the health and safety of our community, which is why I'm here, is in the interest of our community, in the interest of the health and safety of our community, what notice is being provided to, for instance, Platinum Builders to let her, let them know that, in fact, she's not an architect, even when she practices an architect or states she practices an architect? She also goes on to say she practices an architect elsewhere. Do we know where else she just practices an architect? Not licensed, not educated as such, and not licensed as such. So we can make sure that these homes that have been built by Platinum companies and others aren't a safety risk to our community. That's my concern here. She can go ahead and talk about, again, about her firm and her and all that. It's not that. It's not somebody else posting. This is in her own voice, her saying that she's an architect.
Mr. Abrams, she has acknowledged that, and I think that's the basis for this consent agreement that she has signed. So I think she's well aware of the fact that she can no longer use those terms. So I think hopefully moving forward, she will be modifying all of her advertising and keeping that separate. Mr. Abrams, we're...
What do we do with the historical harms?
No. Mr. Abrams, we need to cut you off. I'm sorry. I think we beat this up pretty good, and I think you made your position really very clear. Board, any other discussion?
I have one note I want to talk about. I'm looking at the previous LinkedIn screenshots we had in our board packets, and the updated LinkedIn information, and it's still very unclear that you've changed your position as being an architect and engineer. If this is the updated information, I would consider revising it again. It's very unclear as a member of the public that you're not an engineer.
The information that's on the current social media accounts is still the only thing we've received so far from the brand agency is the actual brand map, and they are now starting to revise the website. So the what they did at first phase was to go through each one of the social media accounts and take out everything that they possibly, you know, could see at first glance, remove all of those things. Likely those accounts will be completely shut down and new accounts will be created with the rebrand. So I do agree that that could be confusing.
Okay, board?
I guess with that statement there, Mr. Chair, so we have the agreement in front of us, but not, I guess not everything has potentially been changed at this point. Because I'd like to read into it, maybe just a few minute reading break to read in to see how the language works and understand, or maybe Mr. Donaldson might be able to instead shed some light on if the stuff, if all not all the information isn't fixed online, is the document that would be executed proper, or do we need to wait until everything's done, or continue and open the investigation back up to make sure everything's covered?
Well, if the board were to accept this consent agreement, that would certainly resolve things as of this moment. Moving forward, if the board were to find that there were social media holding out as being able to offer engineering or architectural services, the board could certainly open a new case and then proceed again for it. We'd continue for as long as that was up. Additionally, the board would also have the authority to proceed with an injunction at any time as well. The board is authorized by the statutes to proceed to an injunction in the Superior Court, and at that point, if materials were not taken down, then it would become a matter of contempt of court, which would be punishable. It's outside the board's purview. Certainly the Superior Court could punish that either financially or with jail time.
Mr. Blake?
Well, I just have a question for the respondent. You know, how quickly can you remove the remaining items? Because I think to our esteemed public member's position, the public doesn't understand that. Most people don't. And that's why anytime the word architectural or architect or engineer comes out, it's a concern because they don't know that. They're not necessarily going to know that. So my question to you is, you know, how quickly can we get the remaining of these social media, any other materials that are there off the line so that they're not there if it's a week or days, something like that? Because I think the point that Mr. Sales was trying to bring up is some of that stuff's still there, and so there's still the potential for confusion. We just want to make sure that there isn't confusion out there relative to what we can and cannot perform.
When we had our meeting just yesterday, it was brought up that there were still some things online. I did offer to just actually shut all the accounts down or have the ad agencies actually close the accounts down. If that's something that you guys would feel more comfortable with, to have us just actually close the LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook accounts, we would actually be totally fine with doing that today, since they are going to be completely renewed and likely will be new social media accounts once they get done. Obviously, working with outside agencies does take some time, and I don't control how they do that. But I am more than happy to do that if that would make, you know, the board happy.
Well, it's not really a question of whether we're happy or not. It's a question of whether or not we are, in some ways, holding themselves as something that they are not. And so I personally would feel more comfortable if they were speaking just as an individual board member. I'd feel more comfortable if those were taken offline so that there isn't confusion, because there's nothing to say that we've signed this consent agreement tomorrow. You may have John Q. Public reach out to you and say, oh, you're an architect. I want to engage your services, and just sort of avoid confusion and a lot of other issues. So, again, that's just my individual sense.
That's a good point, because I think the last thing you want is to come back before this board with another violation. So the sooner all this stuff gets off the net, the internet, I think for your benefit, the better.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I should point out, the board can't, as part of the consent agreement, require an unlicensee to take down social media accounts, and the board does want to be careful about not offering any advisory opinion regarding how the individual should proceed. What the board would be able to do would be, if the board is aware of any kind of future instance of the use of those terms, the board could initiate an investigation, and the board could, again, proceed with injunctive remedy in addition to another consent agreement for another use of those terms.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. Based on information, it sounds like Tawana knows there is information out there that still hasn't been modified in there. So either the board or anybody from the public could submit a, if there were something, if this does close one way or the other, the public, or any of, or we could issue a thing and say, Let's investigate this a little bit more. Just kind of a statement there.
Okay. Board, thank you. Ms. Bethke, I appreciate you coming in. Any final statements?
No, thank you.
I think board has made this position very clear, just to help you out to make sure this gets off the internet and you don't advertise yourself anymore as an architect or an engineer. Okay, board, no discussion. We have a signed consent agreement. Can I get a motion to accept the signed consent agreement?
Mr. Chair, this is Dean Smith. I make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement for 24009.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please? Thank you, Dr. Gibble. We have a motion to sign consent agreement for case P24009. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Gibble? Ms. Lindgren?
Yes.
Yes. I would also like to inform the board at 1046, Ms. Dinky has joined the meeting as well, so you can make a call for her vote.
Ms. Dinky, have you had a chance to listen in on this discussion?
Yes, I have. I vote aye.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. Since I came in partway through this conversation, I didn't understand who was voting on this particular
Any other opposition? Any opposition to this motion? Okay. This motion is approved. Appreciate you coming in.
All right.
Mr. Abrams, appreciate you calling in. and hope this gets resolved to your satisfaction. Thank you. Yeah, let's take a 15-minute break, plus or minus. Be back here at 11:20.
Back into open session from our break.
Mr. Review, roll call, please.
Mr. Gilmore?
Here.
Mr. Kolecka?
Present.
Ms. Flint?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesbitt?
Present.
Dr. Campbell? Dr. Campbell? Ms. Hofig? Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Stanky? Ms. Stanky?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Boho?
Present.
Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Okay, let's move on to item D1.
71?
Sorry, yeah, 71. Ms. Crawford, can you give board a summary of the status of this 221005?
Yes.
Oh, so this is P24003. Okay. It involves previous. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
Case P24003 was open due to lack of compliance regarding case P21058. When direct contact was made by board staff with respondent, he reported that he had been in Mexico for an extended period of time. And while in Mexico, had sent the remaining penalty fees via mail. Once he received our notice, he checked his bank statement and had noticed that the check had not been cashed, and we assumed the check was lost in the mail. Upon his return to the United States, he did provide payment in full for the remaining balance, and we were able to successfully close compliance case P21058. We are before you today just to see what the board would like to do regarding case P24003. Concerning the failure to comply with Board Order P21058.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Ardiles, can you give a brief summary of your position here?
Option for the moment.
I'm going to push the button on your microphone.
Oh, sorry. Oh. Yeah. She pretty much stated the situation on my behalf briefly. I was in Mexico, sent the payment, and I checked with the bank a number of weeks later, a couple of weeks later, and noticed that it hadn't been cashed. I communicated with the office here and confirmed that it hadn't arrived. Then I stated that I would be making that full payment via most likely credit card when I arrived in Tucson, and made sure that the funds were in the account, which I did, and proceeded.
Okay, thank you for coming in. Appreciate you taking care of that. Board, any discussion for Mr. Ordiles?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kolecka. I believe that Mr. Ordiles has made a good effort here to try to take care of that outstanding balance, and can understand sometimes when traveling internationally that may be challenging. I don't believe that there was any attempt to avoid payment, so I would be in support of dismissing P24003 when the time comes up.
Discussion, board, anything else?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I reiterate everything Mr. Kolecka just said.
Great. Okay, let's get a motion then to dismiss case P24003.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kolecka. I'll follow up on that and make a motion to dismiss case P24-003.
A motion by Mr. Kolecka. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell, are you online?
I am. Thank you, and I vote aye.
Okay. Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Nanchi?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Mr. O'Neill, thanks for coming in and taking care of that. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Could I make just a very brief, won't take up too much of your time, statement regarding my case?
Please do.
Is that okay? I was very disappointed with the judge's statement regarding my case. My case, I thought, was very simple. I never got a confirmed meeting with my client to come in and go over the project. And as so I could not present the project to her, even though we were still very, very much in preliminary stages. That's number one. Number two, the drawings that were presented to as evidence by my client, they were they were sketches. They were not to be considered or taken as working drawings, and I think it was interpreted that they were working drawings. Thus, it was identified as very amateurish. These drawings were sketches that were done specifically for my advisement to put on AutoCAD.
Mr. O'Neill,
but I was going to show them to the client to see if we were in the right track. But specifically, the
point. Mr. O'Neill, excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I may break in. I think he's is discussing a case that already went to the Ministry of Law judge and has decided and has been final since November of 2022.
Yeah, Mr. Nunez, we're not in a position to discuss. It's a fait accompli. So I appreciate you coming in and taking care of that outstanding invoice. But hopefully we won't see you again in the future.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to voice my opinion.
Understood. Thank you. Okay, let's go on to Air 7F1.
Thank you, Chairman. So I believe we do have someone in the audience rate D1 to be finalized.
Very good. Okay, this is case P71, P23052. This is a related case to 71, I believe. Ms. Crawford, can you give us a synopsis of complaint, please?
Certainly. On November 23rd, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, in his capacity as the Homeowners Association Management Company, or HOAMCO, architect, represented himself as an architect in the state of Arizona and may have exercised the professional judgment of an architect without registration with the board. Board records show no indication that respondent has ever been registered with the board. As mentioned earlier, this is a companion case to case P23053, which was heard earlier this morning. Through the investigation EAC meeting, it was determined that respondent held himself out as an architect due to him utilizing the terms architect and reviewing architect in his signature lines. It was also determined that respondent practiced architecture as he provided a review and what would be considered a professional opinion regarding the project in question. Based on the recommendations of the EAC meeting and committee, a proposed consent agreement was provided to respondent, and he has since signed that consent agreement.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Do we have someone here that wants to make a statement? Is it Mr. Hall?
No, I was just waiting. I think Neil Schur is online.
Mr. Schur, are you online? Neil Schur?
star 6 to unmute yourself if you're on your phone.
I'm online.
Very good. Can you share your position on this? I know you've signed a consent agreement, but if you've got a statement to make, this would be the time to do it.
No, I do not have a statement. I acknowledge I had done wrong or perceived wrong, more so that I've done wrong, and I apologize. I've revered the profession architecture. I'm called architect, paramount in my realm of work that I do. I went to school at the School of Architecture at the University of Colorado and been involved in architecture and partners of firms, but have never signed or carried O&E insurance, so I've always relied on partners or others. But in Arizona, I am not a registered architect, and I apologize. I will not do so going forward, and have not done so going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you calling in. Board, any questions for Ms. Crawford? Okay, can I get a motion then to accept this agreement? Sure. ABC 23052.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lake. I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for ABC 23052.
Thank you, Mr. Palika. Can I get a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Hankey?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Mr. Chu, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have one more person who is here. 7G2.
Okay. 7G2, this is a good one. Mr. Bunkovich, are you online?
He is, but he's muted.
I am online. This is Dylan Montgomery.
Great. Appreciate calling in. You submitted your request to be considered for a member of the Enforcement Advisory Committee. I remember when you were here before for the interview for the committee. Do you want to make a statement?
Yeah, sure. Just, that was a good process to go through. As soon as I heard Mr. Elson speak, I realized how not ready for that position I was, and I needed to start somewhere. So, at the recommendation of him, he said this would be a good starting point. So, I just want to start contributing here. It's a good place to do it. So, that's why I'm joining that. I think we're requesting that.
Great. Appreciate calling in, and I appreciate your interest in helping the board.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to do it.
Board, can I get a motion?
Mr. Chair, before I make a motion, I just wanted to thank Mr. Bunkovich for volunteering for this and how important the EAC is to this board and the operation. So really, we want to thank everyone that's part of that because it is so critical to how we're able to conduct our business. So with that, I'm more than happy to make a motion to accept Mr. Bunkovich's appointment to the Enforcement Advisory Committee membership.
Thank you, Mr. Kalika. Can I give a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith. I can second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Danchy?
Aye.
Anybody have questions?
I do.
Mr. Smith?
When a new EAC member, do they get any standards or procedure?
Yes, they do.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, I think we completed Dylan's interest. Thank you again for calling in. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Kurt, does that complete our Anyone online?
That completes my call-on list.
So, Mr. Chair, if you want to go back to the ones we skipped, 7A,
4, and 5. And we got some others. We have two items under items 7A, 4, and 5 for recommendation of dismissal. No one in attendance. If the board has no discussion on either of these items, I'd like to get a motion to accept the staff recommendation for dismissal for AL 23016 and HI 24002.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. Reviewed the information, and I will propose a motion that AL 23-016 and HI 24-002 be dismissed.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. We have a motion. Can I get a second, please?
Ms. Dana Fighter, second.
Thank you. All those in favor of dismissing AL 23016 and HI 24002, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Denke?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that carries. Let's move on to.
Members of the board, I apologize. This is Matthew Pitt. I'm the compliance officer for Safe Home Security. I just wanted to just identify myself as being present. I think I neglected to notify Mr. Eden that I'd be attending. I appreciate the outcome, but I just wanted to introduce myself and indicate that I was here representing Safe Home Security. And nothing more than needs to be said, I suppose, to Mr. Smith, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to have that on record.
I appreciate you calling in. And
no trouble.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, board, let's move on to 7B2, which is HI 23003. I don't believe we have anybody in attendance to discuss this or question. Seeing none, I get a motion then to accept staff recommendation for letter of concern for HI 23003.
Mr. Chair, I have a question actually related to this one. We have, it's a question maybe for staff, is there's two previous complaints in here that were closed, it appears. And so it's just, is in the matrix, is it factored in on prior complaints or is it reset each time?
Well, we look at the matrix in this specific case, the case assessment and EAC, and that EAC made that recommendation for LOC.
Okay.
Based on the, I believe, three minor deficiencies.
I saw the same thing, minor deficiencies, and they get these still work deficiencies.
Yeah, I have a question. In your review here, you were stating that the report was changed when you got a copy of it from the home inspector. Is that correct?
No, the second report went directly to the assessor. So the evaluation was done only on the ledgers of the report, not from the respondent.
Oh, okay. But you noted it in here that the report you received from the respondent was changed?
That would have been from the assessor, though, not from myself.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I've got an issue with that. I mean, you're supposed to evaluate the original report, so was there any communication to...
And the original report was from the ledger. That was the original report. Yes.
That's what was evaluated at the assessment level and at the EAC, the original report from the ledgers. What they received.
All right, well, that doesn't jive with the three things they found. They didn't list these other items. Is that correct? You know,
the additional items came from the assessor when he reviewed the report.
The second report, did he compare the two?
Yes, but he only did the ledger's report. Those were based off the ledger's report. Yes.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of surprised that the respondent did not forward his updated version to the client.
I would have to go back and read completely. I think what he was saying he did was he uploaded his second report and he was unsure if they got that one.
Okay.
but he said he did upload it and gave them access to it.
Okay. I guess I don't know what upload means. Is that to his website, or did he upload it?
Not to his website, but gave them access to it through there with an email address. Yes.
That would have been the same way they received the original home inspection report. He corrected something, re-uploaded it to the software, whatever, sent them an email with the updated version.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, do you have a discussion?
No.
So we have a recommendation for a letter of concern for HI 23013. If there's no other discussion, can I get a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a recommendation to accept the letter of concern for HI 23. What is it? Oh, issue a letter of concern. Thank you. HI 23-013.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Can I get a second, please?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that motion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sales. We have a motion and a second to issue a letter of concern. Can I get a vote? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. McGrath? Ms. Lindgren? Okay, Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Lindgren is there, but we have enough votes to approve this thing, so I guess we will abstain. Ms. Lindgren. Okay, that motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, we're on to item 7F1. This is Mr. Cartel. Yeah, this is a neutral one, but he gives a very brief summary.
Yes, sir. So on July 19th of 2023, the board accepted assigned consumers addressing health case HI 22-011 and HI 22-019, both of which included restitution to be paid to the alleges, with the respondent being Mr. Alan Blaker. That was sent to Mr. Blaker for compliance. Compliance was set up. However, on September 12th of 23, the board was notified by Mr. Blaker's sister that he had passed away, was currently deceased. We were able to verify that on September 22nd, 23, through contacting the Arizona Department of Health Services Bureau of Vital Records. It was verified that he is in fact deceased, and a request of the board terminate the compliance case to close it out.
If I may make a clarification, the notification was from his daughter.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, restitution was authorized to those two, but obviously with his passing, we're terminating this, but if they want to pursue it, this becomes a civil issue.
There are a couple of answers to that, and at least one of them I'm not really qualified to give, but yes, they would certainly have any civil remedy available to them, as well as an action against the estate, or to simply list themselves as debtors to the estate. I could not answer any questions about what would happen with the estate.
But as far as the board is concerned, that ends our coverage.
From the board's standpoint, the board issued a consent agreement for a regulatory violation. While there is a reimbursement order as a part of this order, the board's primary interest is in the regulation of the individual. I could not answer any questions as to how it would impact the ability of the other individuals to collect against the state.
Thank you, Mr. Donald.
Considering the status of Mr. Blaker, I think this needs to get terminated. Is that the right term? Okay.
Discussion board on this item?
I agree with Mr. Donald's assessment. And, given the regular individual, that's not possible. That I would make a motion to accept staff's recommendation that this board terminate board order HI-22-011 and HI-22-019 regarding Mr. Al Blaker.
Thank you, Mr. Blaker. Can I get a second, please?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. All those in favor of the motion to terminate board order HI-22-011 and HI-22-019, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Okay. Anybody opposed? Okay, the motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Okay, let's do 7G1 real quick. This is another member interested in becoming an EAC member. And we had a chance to interview him during his interest in serving the Homeland Inspectors Committee. We thought he'd give a great presentation then. Any discussion? Okay, can I get a motion then to accept Mr. Brown's interest to be a PDC member?
So, Chair, this is Mr. Smith. I'd like to make a recommendation to accept James Brown, CH-62774, as an EAC member.
Very good. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'll second the motion to add James Brown to the EAC membership.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Sales. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Dinky?
Aye.
Any discussion? Okay, that motion passes. Okay, the last item on our enforcement is H1. And at the indulgence of the board, I'd like to move this on, table this for the future board meeting.
If we could continue this for a future board meeting, that would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that Mr. Chair? Chair?
Okay. We'll table this for a future board meeting. Thank you. Okay. Item 8B, or
thank you. Item 8A, the update would simply be that a notice of intent to file a bill has been filed. The actual briefs have not been filed yet, but there has been a notice of appeal that's been filed. Once briefs are filed, there would be a more substantive update to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. 8B. This falls in part of me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We need to go into executive?
Well, actually, I am continuing to gather information on this, and believe it would be best if this was also continued to another meeting.
Thank you. Okay, we just did the ADA. The sunset audit.
Where's our 48 pages of joy? So, thank you for
I really don't know what to say. I mean, as board members, do you have any questions or anything that you want to bring up in the audit? I mean, I just, as a highlight, I'm just going to say that it was 2015 when our last census audit responses were filed, and the document was 18 pages long. And so now we've got, what, 48-page document. We tried to break down as clearly as we could every profession, every possible detail, statistic, bit of data, information, comparison, anything that we could put in to add clarity and just really to add clarity for board, for each profession that's regulated under this board. And we look forward to working with the Senate and the House Committee, probably the Commerce Committee, moving forward. So that's pretty much it.
Do you expect that they will come back and ask questions? They'll do a review and ask the clarification of some issues. Does this come back to the board, or do you guys handle that yourself?
I don't think it really comes back to the board, although anything that, you know, Kurt and I are a part of, or if board questioned on something or asked to provide further information, we would certainly always provide any updates to the board members with whatever's going on, or if we meet, we could, if we had an audience with the committee of reference, we could let all the board members know, so we could appear as well.
This goes before the legislature. Do you expect that will be February, March, April, or June?
I have not been given any information on that. I mean, it could happen before the legislative session begins this fall. But I, you know, my personal opinion, I wouldn't anticipate that. You never know. I would think it would probably happen during the next legislative session sometime, but I'll say that and then I'll get a phone call tomorrow. So when anything happens, we will certainly let you know.
Okay, great. We will await updates. Board, any questions for Judith?
I have a question, but just to say that the report is really well written, and I think if I were to attend that as a legislator or a committee member or so forth, clear graphics or those extra pages compared to the 2015 sunset response, miles and edges.
Thank you very much, and I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge that I do a lot of asking, and Kurt and Hayden make a lot of magic happen with those awesome reports and graphs and details and comparisons and everything else. Kurt worked tirelessly on that.
Well done. Okay, Judith, here's the juicy one, the budget. Pretty exciting stuff.
Juicy and budget, I don't know how well those go together, since it's an oxymoron, but like interesting and budget or something like that. Yes, our budget was submitted. I will say, did we have one thing we had to revise on that budget? Everything that was submitted is posted for anybody. We did have a couple of public information requests, and we just point people to, hey, it's all for your view. Look at our website. It's all there for anybody to look at. I think this is a budget question, so I can answer it as part of this. If not, Scott will let me know if I'm off track. But you know that as part of the budget, Kurt and I will meet with different budget analysts. So the JLBC budget analyst as well as the OSPB budget analyst. And the OSPB, Office of Strategic Budget Planning, budget analysts, those are the ones, you know, directly in line with the governor's initiatives and things like that. And Kurt and I, every chance we can, we talk about the things that we'd like to do, and anything that touches money involves the budget analyst. So after we had already submitted the FY25 budget request, the analyst suggested that some of our asks that touch money, like the scholarship initiative, could have been put in as a justification ask. And my response to that was, where were you a week ago? Nobody said that that was a possibility. So anyway,
that wasn't part of our budget ask, but we wish that it would have been, and we asked the director of OSPB for consideration that they might let us submit that justification as part of the budget package. So it would be another way that we might have an end, you know, to a means to an end. So anyway, we haven't heard back on anything, and that might not happen, so just letting you know what's going on with that. Any other budget information you should?
I would just say that they implemented a new system to complete this. Before, we used something called Buddies, which was a Microsoft Access.
Which was around since, like, the dinosaurs. So it's kind of amazing that they implemented something new. I mean, Access-based.
They did implement it a month before, so it was kind of like a game thrown in the deep end for us to kind of get it going. But they did provide training, and we did have help doing it. We did have to add additional things after our submittal, just at least to put on the website. If you were looking at page, for example, 2922 of your packet, where we're asking, having our funding issues, the bottom of the page, you'll see the, let's see, alignment with the agency's strategic plan, impact and historically undeserved. In the new system, those were supposed to be mandatory, but because it was new, they weren't, for whatever reason, when we did the submittal. So they were, the JLBC had requested that we complete those and we make sure it's on the website.
So we did.
Well, it's not as long as the sunset on it, but there's an amazing amount of information in here, more than I probably ever want to remember, but it's impressive. Thank you.
And just so the board knows, both of these documents are on our webpage, on the About page, so anybody can look at the audit, submittal, and our budget.
Thank you, Kurt.
I just wanted to comment real quick. The additional public information officer, I find very interesting and needed, and I'm glad you requested that. Great. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you, Haley. That is been heavy on my wish list for a long time. I mean, the fact that we have two vacant full-time positions that we can't fund because we don't have the appropriated funding to do it is kind of heartbreaking for me for two reasons. I mean, one, I would put another investigator in to be able to do anything that we could to shorten the time that it takes to get through an investigation. I think every board handles things a little bit differently, and our process, because of our board composition, the back end has to be very extensive, and what's expected of our investigative team is pretty extensive, and all that they have to coordinate, and the subject matter experts and all that. Then, to your point, the public, and I'm calling it a public information officer because I don't really know what else to call it, but yes, as far as community outreach, I mean, everything comes back to education, whether you're educating the public, or the legislatures, or working with universities, or all the other things that that would be tremendously valuable for everything, the public, the professions, everybody. It would be, it's overwhelming. A lot of things are overwhelming with this board, and as I learn more nationally, I find out even why we're a little bit tricky. Again, board makeup. I don't mean board members, but the whole enchilada. So, yeah, I think it would just be of tremendous value, and fingers crossed somebody will agree with me on that. Thank you.
Okay, parallel inspection logs and control and stock column. Mr. Smith, do you have an opinion on this?
Yes. I introduced this into the Home Inspection Rules and Standard Committee meeting. Just to address, when an applicant submits a report, originally, all they had was a report of the home inspection, and then in 2012, I think it went to pool and spa standards, and that's not reflected in this law. So I propose to have a column to where when they do a home inspection, if they do a pool inspection, they just check that, and that way that allows staff to pull a report that has a pool inspection report to make sure it's in compliance.
As I've learned recently, pool and spa inspections are not required on inspection.
Correct, but they are required to have the education.
And that kind of a whole another discussion there.
Skin worms.
It really is. Yeah, and my only concern with adding that, I mean, there's, and again, I'll have my legal counsel stop me if I'm wrong here, but there's no way we can ask for something unless we're consistently asking for it. And even if someone chooses to turn in parallels that have the pool and spa inspections, and Julie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the vast majority don't turn in any with the pool and spa inspections, and because they can opt out of it, it's not mandatory. I feel like I'm trying to talk in circles. What do you see on the parallels?
I have yet to see an initial application pool and spa inspection included with their inspection report.
And that is simply because it's not necessary, it's not required, but if we could just, I guess that is going to open the within and require.
I mean, I'll be honest, when I was brand new to this board, one of the first things I learned about the home inspections is that they could opt out of pools and spas, which was really shocking to me because I thought, what? How many pools and spas per capita does Arizona have? And I understand that's kind of a specialized knowledge, but it just, yeah, that was kind of a shocker to me. So the fact that they don't have to, they can opt out. So I find it would be difficult, if not impossible, to ask for that on the review of the parallel that we're looking at. Even though I would like to. I know it keeps scowling at me. It's not that I disagree. It's just what we have in place right now. I don't believe a lot of that for consistency.
Well, for health, safety, welfare reasons, the number of kids that are interviewed is not properly secured. So people go to the general public to make that. Give some direction on some minimum standards rather than no standards.
But that's code compliance. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's not part of pool and spa, is whether or not there's a barrier or the code compliance issues.
No, that is in the standard. Yes.
This is Scott Sales. I was just wondering, I've seen a lot of forms out there in the world where it says, you know, like optional fill out pool or spa. And if we told them up front it was optional and they checked the box, would that seem like that might be okay? We're not saying they have to. If they want to fill it out, they can.
Well, the whole idea, the reason why I thought a column would be good is if they do an inspection and there's a pool and they actually inspect the pool, they'll check it. And then when staff requests an inspection, they go to the pools that they check, that'd be. You've got the home inspection and the pool inspection, and that can be done. That was a whole
idea. Yeah, that makes sense, but if we can't require them to check those things, if they wanted to volunteer and say, hey, I was out there and it says optional, they can choose to, if they did it, okay. If they did it and they didn't want to check the box, they could choose to not check the box if they wanted to hurt.
You know, and I would also say, so what we don't want to do is have somebody check the box and then the random choice of the 30 parallels automatically makes us choose that one each time. As some people may not do a pool spa, so you're kind of increasing the threshold as to what they have to prove to this board to get licensed by having that additional standards to be analyzed.
And also, let's just play devil's advocate. If somebody did check the box and then it was reviewed, their pool and spa inspection, and the only flaws in the parallel that was turned in that were found were pools and spas issues, then could they not just turn around and go, no, actually I opted out of that and I'm not going to check that box. I don't know, I just see problems.
From a legal standard, one issue is going to be specifically that the board would be setting up a screening device to get applications specifically to check for something that the board doesn't particularly regulate, and which would then differentiate between applicants in how much they were being checked on by the board.
board does regulate the fee.
Right, but the issue here would be that instead of the board randomly selecting from parallel inspections that were provided, the board would be specific screening just for the ones that have been provided that said pool and spa. So you would be taking all of those and going to a random selection of the parallel inspections that have been provided to the applicant.
This whole review process originally started with you just have to turn in 5 inspection reports, and it's just randomly changed to the staff would request an inspection report. So can we go back to stating, hey, you've got to turn one in with a pool and one in without it? I mean, it was changed a few years ago.
I would imagine that means a rule change.
Well, how did you switch it from 5 to having the staff request
it? Honestly, I'm not aware. I don't, my other rules it states right now doesn't have 5. It just says a report. I don't know when that may be changed. I would have to do research to figure out if and when.
I mean, it changed from whatever it was to what we're doing now when I got here, because I said, wait a minute, if you only have to turn in whatever they say, then doesn't that lend itself to cherry picking what you're turning in versus you're required to turn up a log with 30 inspections, turn in that log, and then just have staff pull one off the log to request the whole entire report for.
Possibly look into a rules change or something at the home inspector rules committee, look into something like that.
Well, if the homeowner asks for a pool inspection, and the inspector doesn't feel they're qualified to do it, does he recommend another pool inspector who is got background for it?
I think what they do is say, we don't do pool inspection, you have to contact a pool company or something like that, if they're not performing it. But most companies do pool inspections.
But Jack, Mr. Chair, just for clarity, Mr. Smith is talking about here is those parallel inspections of the new applicant that they're required to turn in for initial licensure. And so, again, I understand, like, because he's saying it's one of the requirements on the list of requirements that are supposed to be covered in the education of the total 84 hours of education. However, because of the way our rules are written, we have no control right now. This is something that we want to look into, of vetting that. There's no National Accrediting Association that vets the actual curriculum or what amount of time is spent on the curriculum, if they even cover pools and spas. What's to say somebody can't just say, well, I just said pool and spa, and now I'm going to say that's covered in my curriculum. I mean, we don't know because we have no control, no purview over it at all, as it sounds right now.
But the Rules Committee is working on it. Just so you know.
Rick? Yeah. You covered it. Okay. Any other discussion on pool and spas? Okay, meeting schedule. Next year. Right, look at
that. I did. I have one question related to the January meeting. That are we all aware that's on a Friday?
So that would be the, we've done this the last couple of years, so telephonic only. It should be less than 10 minutes. It's strictly for a consent, you know, to grant licensure, like the beginning of our meeting, because there's kind of a big gap and we don't want people to have to wait. So no other business, no cases, nothing else, but just telephonic, need a quorum, very quick for licensure.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Next item, appointment of an architect engineer. Is that Nate's appointment of an architect engineer member of the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee?
Mr. Kugos.
You want to make a motion?
Well, Well, provided that Mr. Sales is okay with that motion. I'm looking for a nodding of a head there. So.
And let me interject real quick, too, that this is in statute that our Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee needs to have appointed by the chairman an architect member or engineer member of the board.
And as much as I would love to attend those committee meetings, unfortunately, it's a conflict with the standing meeting that I have. So my understanding was that potentially our esteemed engineer board member would be willing and apparently has shown an interest in this area. And I'm totally setting you up here, Scott, to potentially take on that position myself. But I don't want to force you, but just wanted to put that out there based on what our lovely executive director had told me recently.
Thanks, Mike. well, if there's nobody else, then it's you or I, so it's I'm not going to leave that through hanging, so I won't vote nay.
Well, that's not a full-throated endorsement. I don't know what it is, but based on that, and I will owe Mr. Sales for next year, I will happily make a motion to appoint is the right word, or to designate Mr. Sales as the representative from the board to the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll second that.
Great. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell.
Aye.
Ms. Legret.
Aye.
Ms. Dankey.
Aye.
All right. Congratulations, Mr. Sales. I'm not loud.
Thank you both for that, because it's spelled in statute and there's only one each of you, so not a lot of options. Really appreciate that.
I don't want to be hauled off and cuffed for not going to the first doing our duty as the board.
But if there is one where you can't stand it, I can somehow make it. I will be your deputy if necessary. So okay, let's do that.
You should have let off with that. Yeah. Never volunteered.
Okay, director's report.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. So we do have financials for you this month. That's exciting. Really happy about that. Fiscal year, they did adjust our appropriation. There was a back of the bill adjustment that decreased the original appropriation by $15,600, which is humorous to me because that's for little minor adjustments that they find to do with ASRS or risk management or whatever. But this is how it goes because they're happy to cut that appropriation a little bit. But as an example, Kurt and I just met yesterday with the Arizona Strategic Enterprise Technologies, whatever. Under Department of Administration, and there's no back to the bill adjustment to adjust the fact that they are increasing our costs by about $10,000 for our storage for CRM and other random things that we're still trying to figure out. So there's a lot of adjustments that take place, and I don't know what to tell you, including Central Services Bureau, who provides these financial reports for us, who have increased our annual interagency service daily block and branch note agreement by 150%. 150%. Some agencies were even a little bit more than that. That's quite a shocker. And we were told by our budget analyst, don't worry about it, because there's a crosswalk back of bill adjustment. All it said was salary adjustment. Salary adjustment. Whose salary? Not my salary. Whose salary are we adjusting? Oh, well, that was to cover the increase that this department was imposing on all of these boards, like ours, you know, 9 to 10 boards. And I said, well, that's great. Thank you for helping me at least pay for that bill. But that means that's just another $24,000 that you're taking and putting into my appropriated funds to allow me to pay this agency another 150% above what I have been paying for the last 4 years, but that doesn't give me any more funding to fill like my two vacant FTE positions or anything else that, you know, it's very frustrating. Okay, so I'll get off that soapbox. So anyway, that's where we're at right now, and I am grateful for their financial analysis every month to not only share with you, but to make sure that we remain fiscally sound. And although I submit the report, the summary reports for your view with no projections, I do focus on the financial reports with projections, looking at all of the bills and all of the funds, everything that's coming out that I can possibly think about or project ahead to make sure that the money stretches through the end of the fiscal year. Any questions on the financials or budgeting fund? I know it's riveting. I would be terrified if you were the Board of Accountants, too, that you'd be all over financial reports. All right. Online transition. So they have a new software they're using called ClickUp. Kurt says it's very helpful. Kurt, do you want to elaborate on any of this into your project?
Since July, basically, they've included a project manager. His name is Bo, and they've also included this software called ClickUp, which basically allows us as staff to know what's being worked on their end and what we need to do. So if they finish completion of applications and need us to review, the system will indicate it, give us the time, due date basically for us to make any give them any feedback regarding it, gives them a due date as to when they have to fix it. So things aren't just hanging in the air. It keeps us on our on the project timeline. So far, things are actually moving as opposed to previous. Applications are being completed, and we're okaying them. And right now, we're working on universals. Hopefully, it'll be finalized tomorrow, and it will proceed from there. But things are moving along, and hopefully, we do get to a go live at the end of December.
This is seriously such a wish. I'm tired of wishing. It really needs to happen. And I'll tell you a fun fact. I confirmed this with our front desk people. I was rushing back to my office for a virtual meeting yesterday, and I saw the mail delivery people bringing two buckets, like huge tubs of mail. And I overheard them saying to our front desk, this is the most mail of any agency in this entire building. So we are really, really in the position that we need to move forward with just like digital delivery. We need this transition to happen. And it's been exhausting waiting, and we're really looking forward to that. As far as board staff, I just already went over that. We're just going to keep asking for the funding. Hopefully they'll actually give it to us before something crashes and burns. Sometimes that's what it takes. Board member composition, nothing new on that. And you've got all of your statistics for licensing and enforcement. So if no other questions, we can go ahead and move on, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Okay. Item 10, Board Chair Report. Nothing for me, but we'll talk about Clark a little bit later. Mr. Donald? Anything to share?
Nothing today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Standing Committee Reports. Legislative and Rules Committee.
They will be meeting October 10th in a couple weeks. And the homeless victim meeting. They met on the 26th. The draft minutes should be in your packet. And then they'll be meeting again next week, Mr. Sales. And it'll be kind of a continuation of what was discussed at the September meeting.
That's right. Hey, make sure Scott Sales gets an invite to that meeting.
The hope at this next homeless victim meeting is to maybe make any changes for a possible supplemental rule package for this board to consider after looking at public comment and so forth. We were planning on having that today, but they wanted some more time with it.
Okay, any questions on that? Okay, member or standing committees or national council activities, news and meetings.
National meeting end of October, and I still don't know if I'm going.
Phil is so excited to go to that conference. He is our authorized delegate and looking forward to reviewing any materials that they send, and he will be attending like Kurt. Now, really exciting. Clarb, so the landscape architect.
Clarb, I guess.
Okay. You want to be first, Jeff?
Yeah, that was last week. Judith went, Mr. Flicka, and myself, and Julie Pham went. I thought this is one of the better Clarb conferences I've been to. Keynote speaker was the going away the best presentation. And I learned a lot about all the different generation types. I couldn't even begin to list them all, but I'm hopelessly not identifying myself as a dinosaur. I'm a baby boomer, and my parents that are preceding me are traditionalists. And it goes down the list. And the lady that was presenting was from Alabama, and she talked it about very, very fast, very, very loud, and she said, I had to do that on purpose. And we were all just sitting there mesmerized, trying to keep up with her. But she was hilarious. And she broke it down, the different generations, not based on age or period, but based on things happening all around us. COVID, stuff happening in Europe, price of gas. I mean, there's all kinds of things that she uses to justify how she defines the different generations. So I thought that was fascinating.
I'm going to interject, Jeff. She said Generation Dates, which like define if you're a boomer or Gen X or whatever, she said they'll always change or always vary based on moments in history. And this whole thing was to help us better communicate generationally. It's different. But that was, yeah, she was fascinating.
Then there's the next person got up and talked about strategic planning. And in fact, that was very interesting and thoughtful and something we may want to consider in the future, strategic planning efforts. we learned a lot about what they call the job task analysis. Clarb teamed up with IFLA,
International Federation of Landscape Architects.
So that was very interesting. They went to,
I think she said the global job performance analysis took in 77 jurisdictions to evaluate the approach to landscape architecture. And the survey was translated into 10 different languages. And yeah, it was amazing to hear from all these jurisdictions and have the psychometrician break down the meaning and the how things were understood, how things were perceived. Globally for this profession. Did that work?
Yeah. The big deal on the last day was STEM. Landscape architects now have the STEM designation, so that's kind of a big deal. And there's an effort to go promote this nationally. They prepared a white paper on what STEM education is all about for landscape architects, but it really applies well to professions, I think. And we received that, so I think I talked to Judith about kind of issuing that white paper to all the board members. It's a very good read.
I already sent it to Hayden to distribute to all the board members. It's only 106 pages, full of light reading. This is way more interesting, and there's pictures.
I'll let the people talk, but like I said, I thought it was a very, very good discussion, very good presentations, and the deliberations were very fruitful.
I mean, for that STEM designation, they said that there were 120 fields of study that were up for consideration for STEM designation, and landscape architecture was one of only eight that were selected off that. And landscape architects in it. They're educators who teach them. I mean, I'm just going to run through some of these because people just, I think I've always maintained landscape architects are one of the most misunderstood professions, I think.
They encompass site design, land planning, grading, drainage, stormwater management, horticulture, environmental sciences, site sustainability, erosion control, hydrology, irrigation, vehicular and pedestrian circulation, roadway alignment design, manipulation of contours and spot elevations, calculations of slopes, grades, and volumes of materials, design of surfaces and subsurface storm drainage, including hydraulic characteristics and storm drain connections, site planning for buildings and other structures, and the research of innovative design solutions. And sustainability and climate were big words, frequently tossed around.
There's another acronym, ICOR, what that stands for, but they were looking at East Mill practice and the overlap, so that was really very interesting. They've got a ways to go with that, but I don't think we came up with any clear distinction. That's going to be a work in progress.
They're still working on that. The subcommittees from the profession that are considered for the interorganizational council and overlapping regulation.
One thing just to add to the STEM designation that I thought was really nice was the fact that the Department of Homeland Security is the one that actually administers it, which is interesting. So it deals with like visas for work and things like that. But they complemented the landscape architects and I guess if whoever was helping to put it all together or landscape association, they said that it was the best written, and this is now the new benchmark for the quality, comprehensiveness, and detail level submitted. So landscape architects have set a very high bar. And I will say that it was great to attend to see what the other collateral organizations are doing. Because we are a multidisciplinary board, and Scott's come to the NCARB meeting. I've gone to CES with Dana and Scott. It's really great to have that collaboration because we are all ultimately regulating each other's professions on this board.
Jack, it sounds like you got the civil engineering and survey covered in this new thing, so just watch the MyNet overlap there, right?
Anybody else want to add? Do you know how many covered? We did celebrate Jude's birthday, right? We celebrated Jude's birthday. We closed down the bar. Okay, pink card.
Actually, if I could just throw one more thing out there. It was a privilege to be able to present at this conference. The last day, what they did is they separated the member board executives, into another room, and then they kept all of the member board members and attorneys and random people together. And then they asked me to present, being from a multidisciplinary board, to help the member board members understand what their board directors do, like what do I do, which was really a struggle for me to think about because that's not usually what we present about. It's all about what's going on at the board or regulation or the professions, within the professions, whatever. So I was worried that it would be just so super boring, but I did get a lot of comments in the presentation and afterwards. A lot of really curious people wanted to know how we manage things, and I talked really fast for 40 minutes straight and went over, so I think it went well.
It went very well. It was a very good presentation, very thorough, and I had a lot of states come to me afterwards and were impressed that we had such a great staff that did a lot of work for us, and just impressed that we have multidisciplinary and we don't get along with engineers and architects. I just seem to press them to know them. So it feels very good. She did a good job. Okay.
Do you want to add anything before I request? Okay. We don't have anything going on specifically, although I do sit on the executive committee for the Western Council of Architecture Registration Boards, or WCART. We have an executive committee meeting this past Saturday here in Phoenix. Hosted that group. And one of the things that we want to do, and this will be something I'll coordinate with both Kurt and Judith, is they need a member, and by member I mean a board, not an individual person, to basically make a motion to open up the bylaws that we currently have for WestCard, because there are some things that are antiquated that we want to update. For example, our fiscal year is different than other NCARD, which is silly. We want to get that fixed. So I think we're going to attempt to schedule a phone call sometime in the next couple days because we can't take action on it because it wasn't agendized. So I just found out about it Saturday. But that'll be just something that I would request or to motion to open up at that appropriate time.
So what we'll do is agenda a virtual a telephonic meeting, and as long as we have a board present, we can do that.
It'll take 30 seconds, I promise, so it won't take long.
Yes.
I can go first, Dana, and you can add anything if you like. They're doing, you know, just there's nothing really much to report on that. They are instituting with the new Western Zone leadership a call every month or every couple months just to discuss what's going on from kind of pushing the information down from the overall level down to the zone. So the last two have just been information on here's the website, here's how you can access it, and other items of note, but nothing nothing that we really didn't know already about the information on the enforcement exchange and other things like that. So it's been kind of quiet. They've just they've kind of sent out their I don't have all that information on me, the information for the next two meetings next year, and I'm assuming all the meetings were already modified around those dates.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. On the time. That's about it. We are going to give, or myself and Judith are going to give a presentation Thursday to ASCE and Ashley for their state conference here in town. So just a little update to them for what would have happened at the August NCS conference. So just have information shared with folks, but NCS related. So that's it.
Okay, next board meeting is November 7th. No conflicts, hopefully. Okay, future topics. Anybody want to promote something?
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Smith. I'm a little concerned for the call to the public, what Chris Harper was talking about. Can we put that on the agenda?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Oh, will you go ahead?
No. I think there's always been some concern historically. There's been conflicts when the civil's trying to do too much structural. And Julie's probably a lot more familiar with this than any of us regarding the testing requirements and some of the waivers that are granted. So I think this is something that we should be looking at. Julie, do you agree? Are you ever concerned about some of these things to come through? I'm sure you are.
Well,
we
can actually discuss this. Great agenda item.
Right.
You may also ask that item that a little primer for some other board members might be helpful.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I had an item I'd like to add. It's been a couple months. The status of the rules package change for the FE exam for students.
That will be discussed at the LNR committee in 2 weeks. And just to kind of say that we are hoping in a supplemental rule package, maybe to add that to this home inspector rule package to get it gone and done.
Good. Can't wait to find out about it.
Okay, or if nothing else, we are adjourned. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, my first came out complaining about 3 hours to another AG, and she was like, you know, the nursing board goes for 2 days. Yeah, you can see it.